Joining us, Dean, my partner here. There he is. Okay. This is the first time we're doing this, I think, pre-budget approval. So I appreciate your time. I know everybody's busy. But we thought tonight would be a good first step to take a look at new projects in the 2021-2026 capital plan. And that we thought we would go ahead and focus on those initiatives first. And then if anyone has questions on any of the other projects or looking for an update, then we would follow up with that. I believe everyone got a copy of the list of new projects for this year, correct? Good. Okay. All right. So Mark and Tom and the rest of the group, but you also received a copy of that list, correct?
Correct.
Oh, yeah. Good. Okay.
You want us to just start and go through?
If we could, why don't we just start off with the first one, which is personal computer replacements on page 14.
I have the new tax software upgrade on 13.
On 13. Oh, you know what? That I did have it at the end of my list, but let's go ahead because I know we approved it and set a capital plan number last year, but it got postponed, correct?
Yep. I'll let Bert step in here. And
yeah. Lynn, we just postponed it because of the financial difficulties when it came to COVID. This system is to replace our kind of homegrown system. This will kind of expand the ability first to accept tax payments online, which we honestly can't do now with the system we have. And, you know, having it homegrown, we're kind of hurting ourselves with, you know, folks retiring or something from information services. We're relying on them to keep it updated. And when it comes to the New York State tax law, it's not easy. So this system will be maintained by a company and, you know, we'll make things easier, and it will integrate a little better with our financial system too. Because right now, I have folks basically double entering. They have to enter it in the homegrown system when somebody pays their taxes, and then enter the receipt in the financial system. So these two things will integrate, which is, you know, best case for everybody kind of thing. So this will save some time too.
Right. So let me, I'm getting a reminder from our clerks. We didn't even, because I was late to the meeting, we didn't open the meeting. We didn't take roll call. So please forgive me. We'll step back here and thank you everyone for coming. And Natalie, if you will take attendance, please.
Sure. For Ways and Means, Archer.
Here.
Bronk. Bartels.
Here.
Guevaras.
Present.
Haynes.
Here.
Mayo. And Walter.
Here.
For Public Works, Fabiano.
Here.
Green. Cahill.
Here.
Heppner.
Here.
And Litz.
Here.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. Any questions on the new tax software? Anybody have any follow-up questions with Bert? Bert, when you're looking to kick this off right at the beginning of the year so
yeah,
that you'll...
you know, Lynn, we're going to go out and we'll do the go through the RFP process again, get quotes, and, you know, we'll go through that process before bringing it back to the legislature.
Okay.
All right. And time frame, I'm hoping by the end of next, you know, end of 2021, this will be online
in
and
place.
Ready to go.
Okay. Yeah. Comptroller Gallagher.
Will this payment system allow any other to the county occupancy tax? Yes.
The couple of vendors that I have talked with said it is capable. It's just a matter of, you know, going through the RFP process and seeing what other vendors can do. It's kind of secondary, but, you know, I also know we could use it for other things such as occupancy tax and such. So that's my plan.
Okay. And did you go out to RFP at all last year on this?
We were kind of in the middle of that, and, you know, we didn't finalize it. So we kind of put everything on pause. So we'll go ahead and restart that.
Okay.
I have a question.
Legislator Walter?
Just remind me, was our conversation, so this is 25,000 less, was that a conversation we had that you didn't need to RFP to the 575, so you lowered it?
Well, that was our, when we had it in the 2020 program, it was our best case, you know, our estimate. As we got a couple of vendors giving us quotes, it was less than that.
Okay, Comptroller Gallagher.
Sorry, one more question, but what about Munis or New World? Will we be asking them and pricing out the options that they have for online payment systems, which are New World and Munis are, you know, significant software financial investments that we already have, systems we already have. Thank you.
I would think, you know, first in terms of the tax system, see what they have in terms of the online kind of payment program, because I know as part of the RFP process, we're kind of asking that as part of the process. I don't think, you know, scoring wise, it may hurt those without it. If we select one, we could always reach out to New World in terms of those online payments. It just brings up the whole double entry again, which I'm trying to avoid.
And you'd want these systems to be able to speak to each other, correct?
Correct. Yeah, correct.
And that's not what I was asking. I'm sorry. I'm asking, New World has a module that allows online tax payments. Are we going to be using, inquiring as to the cost of that as a part of this process? Because it may be significantly cheaper than...
They could respond to the RFP as well, if they, because their tax system has to work with New York State regulations too.
Okay, any other questions? Legislator Bartel.
Just following on the question that Comptroller Gallagher just brought up, I mean, is there a benefit to utilizing one of the systems that we already have?
Because it would fit
the integration aspect?
That probably is a plus, but in terms of the cost, it may even cost more. You know, they kind of have you, that's why we have to go out for the RFP. I think it would integrate much better, but, you know, we'll see what they have, too, to see if it works.
You want to see if it's competitive.
Yeah, and I will say the one biggest drawback with some of the systems we've kind of seen is the installment contract process we have. Some of the systems can't handle that. They can handle just paying the taxes delinquent as a whole, but with the installment contracts, which allows taxpayers to pay monthly, some of those systems can't handle that. So we have to get the right system.
Can I just ask a follow-on?
Please, go ahead.
Are you saying that the systems, I mean, have you looked into the systems that integrate with our existing systems? It just seems to me counter.
We've had a couple of demos, but yeah. In terms of the cost, I don't know what the costs are either. Again, you know, that's why we're going through the RFP process.
Okay. And it's something, the interconnectivity and the ease is going to be something you're going to weigh.
Correct. Absolutely.
Even against the cost, yep. Because, I mean, longer term, it seems to make sense that it would be one system.
Correct.
It's all part of the – oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Mark.
Go ahead.
It's all going to be part of, like Bert said, the RFP process. Another concern is when you have all of your systems behind one vendor, if something happens to that vendor, it's a little concerning. But these are all – this will all be criteria set forth in the RFP.
Okay, Comptroller Gallagher, you had a follow-up?
Yeah, I was just going to ask, when we replaced HTE, did we go through an RFP process to find New World?
Yes,
okay,
we
thank
did.
You.
Yep.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, why don't we move on to page 21, HVAC for various buildings.
Sorry, I was on 14. Do you want to do 14 before 21 or...
Oh, God, yes. That's what happens when you're taking a call just before a meeting. I apologize. Yes,
I'll be quick because this one is IS. We have a number of, especially at the sheriff's office, computers that still use Windows 7, so we have to pay extra to have the support for those, and it's quite costly. Bert said that we could finance these computers. He can do a shorter bond over the useful life and kind of do it all at one shot so we can stop paying the extra support for Windows 7. We're going to replace 175 computers, as it said, 125 of which at the sheriff's office.
So the cost of the replacement will be less expensive than what we're paying currently? Is that what you're saying?
It'll be less. I mean, so these are coming end of life as well. So yes, between the fact that they are coming end of life and we pay extra just to support the Windows 7 security updates, it'll save money overall.
Legislator Bartels?
120, there's 125 desktop computers at the sheriff's office. Do we have 125 people working at desks there? I know that sounds like a crazy question, but that seems like an alarmingly high number for the sheriff's department.
Between, yeah, I mean, I think between all areas.
Really?
It's corrections. It's the sheriff's department. It's urgent. It's all, you know, they all have computers over there.
I mean, I'm just surprised by that. Having toured it, didn't even seem like there were 125 workstations there.
Legislator Litz, you have a follow-up question?
Don't the inmates have access to the computers?
Not those computers.
They okay. do have access to some computers. I don't think these...
Yeah, the computers are the tablets that are provided free for certain aspects, but they pay for other aspects of the tablets. But that's a different contract.
Legislator Green?
Yeah, I'm not sure we've resolved this, but my question has to do with the waste and what will be done with the quote end of life, if they really are end of life, with that equipment? How will that be handled?
We bid out, we'll do quotes for e-waste recycling. We have a vendor that comes and recycles all the parts that they can and then disposes them correctly.
Thank you.
Okay, any other follow-up questions on this?
Yes.
Legislator Cahill.
So these are just for the sheriff's department? 125 are just for the sheriff's department? Nobody else?
Yeah, those 125 are just for the sheriff.
I'm thinking, you know, they got to be keeping 25 on reserve or something as backups or something. That's an awful lot of computers. I mean, is this going across all the substations? Across the whole county and all that as well? Okay, that explains. It's not all just in one location. Okay, I got it.
Legislator Litz?
Well, what I was going to say is there's probably more than one computer per person because each vehicle has a computer in it, and I don't believe they take it out when they go into the office. There's another one in the office, I believe.
These are desktops.
Okay, so we
right?
have
–
I'm sorry?
They're desktops?
Yep.
Yeah.
So the headcount is over 215 individuals between corrections and the, you know, the patrol side. So there's over 200 staff for 125 new computers.
Okay. I have Legislator Green, then Bartels.
I already asked my question. I forgot to lower my hand.
Okay, Legislator Bartels, and then Legislator Walter.
Yeah, I'd like to hear from the sheriff. Like, I get that there are over 200 people, but for desktop computers, it sounds like a lot of computers, given that, I mean, I can't imagine that every individual CO has their own desktop computer and every, you know what I mean, it seems like a giant number. So I would just like to have a better understanding from the sheriff of this aspect. If it is truly only desktop computers.
Legislator Walter.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say perhaps we could just get a breakdown of where they are. I mean, I would agree. In the jail, there's rotation on the pods. Those maybe they share one, but I think it's just we can get a breakdown.
Okay, one of the things, and I put this to you, Bern, and to you, Mark. Have you guys looked at, you know, have done a needs analysis around, you know, how many folks really do? Can you have shared kiosks with different access and sign? Sorry. I don't know how my mute went on. Have you guys done an analysis of how many computers, kiosks could be used? Have you looked at reducing the number in the sheriff's office at all?
I can just state, I mean, I don't know if Bert has more information. IS has looked at this. They had full input. They've come, you know, they're coming from a place of guidance that they need to reduce in all areas. I would be very surprised if, you know, the answer to that question would be no. I'm happy to circle back with them because I don't know off the top of my head if that's 100% been done, but I can just tell you the guidance from our office. You know, it's not like they're putting in 10% surplus or anything in these numbers. They're submitting capitals with the lowest numbers possible. So I'll follow up with them.
Okay, if you could, that would be helpful. Any other questions on this? Legislator Heppner.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out, don't we have the special law enforcement meeting tomorrow evening with the sheriff?
We do.
This is something I think just for, I don't know if Jay's on or the clerks, you know, just a note.
Put it on the agenda for tomorrow. That's
something we can discuss just for the sake of time.
Right. We'll also give them the heads up beforehand.
Yep, exactly.
That'd be great. Okay, thank you. Okay, now, page 21, HVAC, various buildings. I see you did put in here the courthouse, county office building, information services, 1 Pearl Street and 17 Pearl. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Any questions? No questions. Okay, so I guess it's pretty clear. All right, the next one is page 22, parking lot kiosk. And is this in lieu of an attendant? So you're looking to
phase that over time, yes. I mean, the people who are currently working in that position would be given, you know, other duties would, and then eventually over time, this would replace the entire attendance system.
And how many folks do you have in the attendance system now? They're part-time, right?
Yes. Don, Tom, do you have that number? I think it's 4 part-time individuals.
Yeah, I can look that up for you real quick.
Tom, we can't hear you. I don't know if your headset's mic'd or muted.
So yes, we have about 5 part-time attendants. They have been being paid COVID leave during the pandemic. So the idea would be to move away from attendance and have an automated system.
Okay, Legislator Heppner, then Cahill. You're on mute, Jonathan.
So like at the county building where we have the attendant, would that also include a policy change in terms of, you know, so during the day, there's paid parking, but obviously once the attendant leaves at night, the arms go up and then it's, you know, considered free parking in the evening. Is it part of a change in the actual policy of the use of the parking lot? So just strictly for now, as is, just replacing manpower versus.
For now, it's replacing the people, and also going a little bit more cashless, etc. But we would come to you with a policy change at some point if it was merited. You know, we could collect around the clock, or it could stay the policy that it would continue to be free parking in the evenings and on the weekends, that the kiosk can be set up that way. I think part of the idea behind this would we either do an IMA with the city of Kingston to do parking tickets, or figure out a way to do it in-house. But one of the thoughts was, you know, they're already going around and ticketing cars uptown. We could do a kind of a shared service agreement with them, or we could use the attendants currently to do that.
Thank you.
Legislator Cahill, then Walter.
Yeah, so right now, what parking lots are paid in the county? Just at the office building? Is that the only one?
Yes.
Okay, so now is there any plan to put this kiosk behind the courthouse in that big parking lot that's used quite a bit, actually, right?
Currently is not that plan. Don, I don't know if that's...
Well, actually, we had a discussion about that earlier today in-house. We would recommend strong consideration be given to that parking lot as well for a kiosk, you know, format for parking. Right now, the focus is on Ulster County Office Building.
Yeah, the $30,000 represented is for the county office building. If we did one uptown, I would assume a similar cost for that as well.
What is the revenue on one of those in a year? Do you know, guys know that by any chance?
No, but I think it'll be more than what is collected by the attendants, because everybody's, you know, it's going to be a more certain way of handling money. It's going to be a more secure way of handling money.
Yeah, right. Thank you.
Legislator Bartels. Oh, I'm sorry. Walter, then Bartels.
Thanks. Thank you. So I guess I have a few little questions. One is looking at the cost, and have you considered, you know, I mean, that if the Kingston police are coming around, that's on a regular basis every single weekday, you know, what that added cost would potentially be, if any, to kind of balance out the two is first question. The second is, are you going to raise the price? And the third does it take coins? And I guess I'm thinking a lot of people who come into that building aren't people who necessarily have credit cards. You know, it's the low price is very important, you know. So those are my questions.
So starting backwards, the price would be a matter of policy for the legislature to set. In terms of, Mark mentioned an IMA. We would want to explore all options under that IMA, including the Kingston PD doesn't do meters. They have somebody that they hire to do meters, some bodies. And if they're collecting the fine revenue and we're collecting the fare revenue, then that there might not be any additional cost to the county at all. But I think these things all need to be explored.
So they have a route that they walk daily, the parking attendants for the city of Kingston, that they basically walk by this lot several times a day to check the meters. So I don't anticipate that it would be much additional costs.
And then will it take coins?
The machine itself would have to be put out to a bid or RFP, but if they were duplicating the ones that are already uptown, then yes.
Okay, Legislator Bartels.
I'm okay. My questions were asked and answered.
Okay, Legislator Heppner.
Yeah, I think Legislator Walter made a very important point there. With I know it has to go after RFP, as Don said. I totally understand that. Hopefully it would, but you know, I couldn't see myself supporting an RFP that, you know, essentially, you know, we have the ability to put in that RFP what we're requesting. And I think it absolutely would need to have the ability to take dollars and coins. Or, you know, I think that's a really good point.
Right. Okay, you'll add that to your RFP, right?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Thank you.
Definitely, yes.
Okay, excellent. All right. Page 40. I'm sorry. Yes, please.
One more quick question.
Sure.
So you mentioned that this is to phase out the staff that you're using at the parking lot now. When do you anticipate that occurring? In 21 or 22? What year do you think that's going to happen?
I think that'll happen in 21. I think we've already addressed that to a certain degree in the budget, but I think that'll happen in 21 once the kiosks are there.
Originally, staff will be assigned, I think, other duties, and we will not be backfilling these staff over time.
Right. So those additional duties, are they being done by somebody else already? Or is this a hole that we're not filling, we don't currently have somebody doing? I just don't want to spend $30,000 that doesn't, you know, it's just an additional expense for something, and now we're finding work for somebody to do because we took it away by spending $30,000. I know it's a small amount considering the size of the budget, but in this coming up year, every little bit is going to help.
Right. So seasonally, it depends, but there are attendant positions at the pool complex that we've discussed moving these individuals to. There's other positions that we did not backfill in this budget that these duties could be added onto. So,
and just give you an idea, we spent about $44,000 a year in part-time pay for the people that are there. Assuming those positions aren't backfilled over time, it would be a one-year payback.
We also anticipate that when, you know, these additional duties are offered to these attendants, that they may choose to separate earlier. Many of them are kind of retirement age.
Yeah.
Legislator Bartels, you had your hand up?
No, Don just answered. I was just going to ask what we spend on the part-time labor.
Okay, great.
I have another question.
Legislative Walter.
Sorry. I'm all for progress. The idea of these guys not being there, I'm having a little trouble, and I know I'll get over it. But there's also the part that right now people pay for as long as they're staying. There's no penalty. They pay for as long as they're staying. So this is going to institute a penalty if they mess up, if the MV takes much longer and they didn't realize it. And you know, sometimes they don't want to get out of line or wherever they're going that they're in line. So is there a way to ensure that whoever is assessing, whoever is giving these tickets, like that they're not giving them these outrageous fines? Because, you know, again, a lot of times it's hard to predict. It's not like you're going to run into a store. It's hard to predict how long it's going to be. And the idea of people being paying all of these added fines to come to our services just doesn't sit well.
So the yes, and we would obviously come to you as the policymakers to determine the fines. One of the issues that we have with this lot oftentimes, and one of the reasons why we wanted to install these kiosks, this is something that we've been looking at for quite some time, is that we have individuals that work in the uptown area that will basically come in prior to the gates going down and park there all day long, thus limiting. I mean, if you come to the DMV, oftentimes, obviously not now during COVID, but if you would have come last summer, let's say, people are just circling the lot for hours because there's no available parking spots. This will turn over those parking spots, thus having the people who actually need the services to go into the DMV building having those spots be available for them.
Legislator Haynes.
Yeah, the issue that Legislator Walters brings up is actually already occurring. You know, my own dad got a parking ticket because the lot was full and had to park in a metered spot out on the street. So it's a valid, it's a good issue, but it's actually one that's actually already occurring.
Anyone have anything? I'm sorry?
We didn't tick a legislator Haynes' debt. That was the city of Kingston.
Okay. Legislator Bartels.
Yeah, and I'm sure we could address that by setting the system to have a longer limit, let's say, than the parking meters have, if that's what we chose to do, right? I mean, it's up to us in programming the system what the maximum allowed is. So we could always think generously in terms of that, in terms of what a normal wait time at the DMV might be.
And when were you thinking of implementing this policy or of implementing the Kia so we can start thinking policy wise?
I'd have to go back to it. Tom, do you know when this will be complete?
Well, we need this plan to go forward to even start the discussion. We need to get an RFP out for the kiosks to get pricing. And as we do that, we're going to need to have some policy decisions made. But
yeah, contracts and establishing.
Sometime during the first quarter to maybe mid-year, we would need policies in place. Don, is that?
Yeah, by the time we establish the capital project, get the contracts in place to get the work done and have the work done, I would say earliest mid-next year.
Yeah.
So that's for the policy, but as you heard tonight, there's a lot of questions. It not only has to accept credit cards, but it needs to accept actual cash or have a way of paying with money. So I guess elements of the RFP have to have those considerations in there, correct?
Yeah, and we've made notes on those elements,
okay,
Lynn, and we'll make sure they go out in the RFP so that we can get prices back. These kiosks can go up ahead of having actual policy decisions made.
Right, but we still need to ensure that the machine itself can handle some of the things that came up here.
Absolutely, right.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Let's move on to development court LED lighting retrofit.
What page is that, please?
40.
You want to walk us through, this is something that, did this come out of, this is part of the climate action plan.
Yeah, this came out of the Office of the Environment.
Okay. Legislator Walter.
Did you have a sense of cost savings, electric utility cost savings as a result of this change?
Yeah, lighting projects are typically some of the highest payback or the quickest payback. So usually a lighting retrofit to LEDs is a less than a 3-year payback. I believe this is one of the last county office buildings that we've done. We've retrofitted most of the others.
Legislative Litch.
Yeah, is this part of the Central Hudson LED exchange program? Because a lot of those programs, there's very little cost to convert.
Yeah, we're going to be looking at working with the Central Hudson program. The other retrofits we've done via NYPA, and the Environment Department is going to take a look at the program Central Hudson has and see whether NYPA is still a better deal than that or whether we should go with the Central Hudson program.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, let's move on. Page 41, EV charging stations. Any questions here? Legislator Walter.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I'd like these everywhere. So I'm just wondering how you pick these. I see, you know, most of them are situated in Kingston, except for the Ashokan Rail Trail. But so, you know, thoughts about why distributing them broader in the county and why you picked these particular places and maybe what thoughts, why in this 5-year plan, we don't have these going anywhere else.
So one piece of this project is really to support county fleet operations. So the locations initially were set up, you know, in places where as we go more green with our fleet, we'll need to add the charging capabilities, which is why these locations were chosen here. And then, of course, the Ashokan Rail Trail parking, that trailhead is, I think, less for that and more for bringing folks with EVs to the trail. But otherwise, it's to offset operations, and if they get used by the general public, that's a great side benefit.
So I guess my second question was, since this is a five-year, six-year plan, how come it doesn't include these EV stations all over the county? I understand why initially you picked those, but again, this is 6 years or 5 years.
Right. I think all of this spending is being done in 2021.
Again, so no plan to put EV stations elsewhere in our county in the next 5 years?
I think this is, again, this is the Office of Environment that's working up this. I believe what you're going to see is that those years will get filled in when the locations are known and costs are more certain. So I don't see this capital going away in 2021 with these installations. I believe it's an ongoing situation.
The other piece of this is that Amanda is monitoring the availability of state funding for this. And so we know that there's state funding available for next year. I know she has a plan for how she wants to roll these out, and these are the ones that she's identified state funding for.
Legislator Bartels.
So in the plan, it says 36 level two and three level one. Is that correct? For $105,000, we're going to have 39 new charging stations?
No, I would guess that that's the total that will have been done once these are done. Because, of course, this has been going on for several years now.
So do we know how many new ones are associated with this 105 and where those new ones are going?
Tom, do you have that information?
No, I do not. We would need to get it from Amanda and Nick.
So she just gave you the number to plug in?
Yeah, I mean, they submitted this capital project.
Yeah.
So can we do a follow-up? Can we find out what these numbers represent as to how many of them are already installed, where, and then what is the 105 for this year or next year?
Yeah, we'll follow up on that.
Okay. Any other questions? Legislator Walter.
I mean, if you're following up on it, I'm going to just repeat the same thing that it's, I recognize the reasoning for limiting it, but this is supposed to be a five-year picture of where we want to go. And I feel like it's a really important thing for us to show a commitment towards having these in more places. And so if you're going back to her, perhaps that would be another important thing to bring up is this, you know, to me, this is a vision also, especially since for the projections. And
yeah, I'll ask her to share what the overall vision is along with the details for next year.
And the next 5 years, yeah.
That'd be great. Thank you. Any other questions on this? Okay, then let's move to page 49, Bennett Road Bridge.
So this bridge is in the town of Awarsing. It received a red flag. It was required to be closed. It had previously been designated a 3-ton weight limit bridge by NYSDOT. They subsequently came in and closed it. What invariably happens when a bridge gets flagged limited to 3 tons is that large trucks don't obey that and they continue to use the bridge and deteriorate the condition of the bridge. So this bridge is now closed. This is in the town of Awarsing. It's situated on a length of Bennett Road, a leg of Bennett Road that's 0.13 miles long. And it essentially serves as a shortcut over to Sportsman's Road and the upper leg of Bennett Road. So this capital is for the removal only. And some decisions are going to be need to be made whether or not there is a good reason to replace the bridge. This isn't one that we think automatically qualifies for replacement because it's essentially already a shortcut. There are ways out to Route 55, both to the north and to the south. The residents aren't happy, particularly those that live near the bridge, but they do have an outlet. A safe outlet. So somebody has to make some policy decisions here on whether we're going to replace.
And is the $200,000 the cost of replacement?
No,
The $250,000 is for removal.
Oh.
It would be significantly more to replace.
This is a $3 to probably a $4 million bridge to replace. This is the removal only.
Unless it happens to eat bridge panels.
Yeah.
Legislator Bartels.
I mean, I have a bridge in my district that's also closed pending repair, and I have residents in my district that are upset as well. I think first and foremost, I'm not weighing in yet on what to do about the bridge, but I think the timeline of the decision making should be shortened. When we have residents, and because I don't know this bridge and I don't know the area around it, when you say a shortcut, I don't know what that means. I don't know if it means the difference of, 30 or 40 minutes for someone or three minutes. But I think that, waiting, if right now we're looking at 2022 before we even complete the removal, you're talking about years of a closed bridge. I think that these decisions should be made more expeditiousness.
And I could give you Tracy, I'm sorry, I could give you a little context here. This section of Bennett Road has no residents on it. All the residents are on another section of Bennett Road and Sportsman's Road. So when I say shortcut, the route out is 1.8 miles to Route 55.
Or 2.1.
What?
You go the other way through Brandy Brook. It's either 1.8 or 2.1 miles to Brandy Brook.
Right. So it's not a long detour.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. But either way, I think we should be making a decision sooner and not putting off a decision for a year or so. We should have, I don't know how that gets decided. I guess it's a money decision and ultimately a budget decision, but I would hope that we make that more quickly rather than waiting another year to decide.
So I have Legislator Fabiano, Legislator Gavaris, Legislator Haynes, and Deputy Executive Ryder. So we've got a lot of folks that want to weigh in. So Dean, you want to kick it off, and then we'll give John a shot at it.
I also have my hand raised.
Okay. So for some reason, Manna, I am not seeing your hand raised, so I apologize. Just chime in when that happens, because for some reason it's not showing up on my screen.
Okay, thank you.
Dean?
The only thing I had to say is, first of all, I agree with Tracy that this decision should be made sooner than later. You're interrupting people here that's been used to the way it's been for probably many, many years. But I do agree with Tom Jackson. If the alternate routes are within a mile to 3 miles, it's fine. So I just think this decision should be made sooner than later. Do you know the cost as of this time, or you haven't looked into it
after the bridge is taken down to replace it with a new bridge?
We talked to the engineers that it's going to cost in the range of $3 to $4 million.
Wow.
Okay, so we have John Gavaris, Heidi Haynes, Mark Ryder, and then Legislator Litz.
Thank you. So, yeah, I was going to talk about the distance. It's a very short distance, Tracy. Quite honestly, the direction that you would be coming from, either from Sullivan County, Grahamsville area, or coming from the 209 Napanock area, the two turnoffs, essentially it's an even distance. It doesn't really add anything to the trip. The other part, though, I can say from a useful standpoint is, does this bridge actually have to come down? Can it be some type of barricaded off? Because I can tell you there are a lot of people who fish off of that bridge because there's not a lot of public access to the Rondell Creek. That's what that covers. And there's, you know, all of it is private property along the creek for the most part. That bridge there's a lot of people who go to that to fish off of. So if we could have it as, you know, some type of functional docking area that they can fish off of and still, you know, not have to spend the money to take it down, I would say I could see the benefit in that.
We'll look into that, John.
Once it's been red flagged, there's a little bit of liability on our end if somebody gets hurt off fishing off of it. But
Legislator Haynes, and then I'm just going to insert Legislator Green because I don't know where she seems to be raising her hand, and for some reason I'm not seeing it. So, Heidi?
Is this also known as the George Barthel Bridge? Yeah, that looks like a sweet little bridge. And is that a tree farm? Does anyone know? It looks like, is that a tree farm? Semi? Okay. All right, thank you.
Okay, Legislator Green?
Okay, I wasn't clear in the beginning how it was determined the bridge was unsafe. What I heard was that it could become unsafe because of the use by trucks, and the trucks are ignoring the weight limit. But I just overall think we tend to be in a hurry to deconstruct and to construct. And, you know, I said this on a public works call, and I've said it in other circumstances. I think we have to, you know, of course, keep safety first, but I just, you know, it's a concern to me how easily we seem to destroy things and then build things rather than renovate. And so my central question is, you know, is there a way to strengthen the bridge without taking it down and rebuilding a new bridge?
So the short answer is no. The state closed the bridge. They required us to close it because of safety concerns. It's already been through a 3-ton weight limit. That didn't work. And now it has to be closed completely. It's just not safe. There is no further fixing that can be done to this bridge. All that's in the past.
Legislator Litz.
Okay, I was just going to explain that. All bridges are inspected by the state every other year. Red flag bridges sometimes are inspected every year, sometimes every 6 months, depending on the severity of the red flag. And, you know, the bridge is red flagged, and then at some point in time, the state inspects it, and they said, listen, we got to close this bridge. And it's not even our decision. The state mandates it. So it's not like we're dragging our feet to figure out, you know, when we're going to close the bridge. And this is exactly why last year, we passed a resolution to have a pot of money for DPW that when a bridge is flagged, either yellow flag or red flag, that there's some money that they can utilize to fix whatever the flag is and open the bridge.
Exactly.
That they didn't have to wait to put a resolution in and take months, and then we find the money for it.
And for the record, we used every penny of that this year.
Excuse me?
We used every penny of that this year. So thank you.
Well, that's my point. We were proactive so that when this occurs, we can fix them right away. So it's not like DPW is dragging their feet. We gave them a pot of money, and obviously they've used it. To fix red and yellow flags because the money's all gone already. So there is a process. The process is driven by engineers inspecting the bridge every other year or possibly every year and flagging the components that make it unsafe.
County, Mark?
Yeah, I just wanted to quickly, I know that this timeline and the timeline for other bridges can sound long and be frustrating to folks. We have to go through, it's not like DPW is going to be sitting back and then all of a sudden we're going to construct or in this case deconstruct this bridge in 2022. I would encourage us all to continue to meet and discuss the policy decision on whether we want to spend the $4 to $5 million on this bridge. But as far as the speed on this bridge and getting other bridges replaced, we have to go through a process of design. We have to obtain whatever property requirements that, whether that's just purchasing a piece of the property or an easement. Much of that includes stream work that has to be done, and we're weather limited on that. We can't be in the streams on a certain time. So before we get to that point, it has to be surveyed, and then the bridge has to be designed, and then we have to go to bid. So it's not like we can snap our fingers and the bridge is replaced.
Legislator Bartels, then Fabiano.
So a couple of things. In terms of, I definitely think we should have the continued conversation about the policy decision about what to do about this bridge. And I appreciate Legislator Gavaris's local insight and think the idea of preserving the bridge potentially for fishing, if it's something we could do is a great idea if we go toward not replacing it. I know, I've certainly seen those places in Florida, you know, whole roads that have been abandoned that are now fishing piers where new bridges over water bodies of water have been placed. But in terms of my concern about the timeline, which I'm speaking in advance of a future resolution, I don't mean to imply that DPW or Highways and Bridges are dragging their feet and making this, you know, go on forever. But the matter of fact, it's really hard to respond to constituents, particularly, and I know Mark and I have spoken about this, but particularly constituents that have businesses that are affected by road closures due to a bridge and tell them, yeah, we know we closed this road and it's a county road, but it's not going to be open for 2 to 3 years. I mean, that's just very hard for people to stomach and understand. So I'm simply saying, I think where we can expedite the timing on these things, we need to, and it's hard. If a bridge is going to be reconstructed, it's hard to look at a timeline and think 3 years out, and it's hard to explain that to people who are very affected. It sounds like in this case they're not as affected. It's a difference of 1.8 miles or 2.1, and based on what Legislator Gavaris is saying, that gives me pause. That's not the same for the bridge in my district. And there was a bridge replacement in my district on a state road that caused unbelievable angst because it closed off the road to the mountain for more than a year. And people didn't even know it was a bridge. It didn't look like a bridge. It was just, you know, it basically was a culvert under the road, and it closed off 4455, the direct access to the mountain, for over a year, which caused tremendous frustration more than anything that I've experienced as an elected official. It was a state road, so it wasn't anything I could do, but I think we need to be mindful of the impact to locals in all of these cases.
Legislator Fabiana.
Yes, I just want to elaborate on what Tracy said. I am not pleased, don't misunderstand me, that the County Highway DPW at all is dragging their feet. I think they do a really good job. But I think that in the 15 years that I've been on this legislature, and most of that time I served on the Highway and Bridge and Capital programs, we have to get back to getting our priority list in order. Infrastructure for any town, village, county, or state should be the number one priority. And like Tracy said, now you shut this bridge down. You know, how did we get to this point that it's going to be shut down? Somebody had to see it coming. And then you're going to disrupt people's lives that they got to ride this way 2.5 miles. You're going to affect businesses. I think Ulster County should, when it comes to the DPW and highway, they should worry less about bicycle trails, hiking trails, and worry about more about the important things that is the heartbeat of a community is infrastructure, their roads, their bridges, their culverts, their drains. And I see that a lot of areas throughout Ulster County and the state of New York seem to be getting away from that of a part of a priority and focusing on things that are much enjoyable, but they're not priorities of people's safety and the mechanism that makes our communities function. When I was growing up, any town, infrastructure was the most important. Highway departments, infrastructure was the most important priority in any community. And we have gotten away from that. And I think that if we don't get back on that track, you're going to see a lot of bridges closing because the money's not going to be there. So I think we have to get back on that track for now and for 25 years down the road.
Probably the first time since this happened, I live near a bridge, and during the earlier part of this year and COVID, it was the Bootle Hole Bridge. And I have to say, they did an amazing job. It was done in-house. It was done in a quicker time frame than anybody had anticipated. And I guess my question to you, Tom, and the team is, you did that in-house. You were able to, and you were replacing decking. And so maybe it was just an easier fix than other bridges. But is there potential for this bridge to be done in-house or something like that? Because it was pretty amazing, and they did a great job. So please extend my thanks to them as well.
Thank you, Lynn. So let me just try that. The Bootle Hole Bridge had lesser problems than the Bennett Road Bridge. Okay. We were able to do what I would call preventative maintenance, which extended the life of the bridge. Someday that bridge too will have to be replaced. But what the bridge crew was able to do with our engineering staff was to concoct a renovation to it that allowed it to extend its life. With Bennett Road, that we've already been there, we've already done that. The bridge has to be closed now. It can't be fixed. Mm. If I could just add one other point here, I think on the way to evaluating the cost benefit of this bridge, I really believe we should be looking to work with the town of Awarsing possibly on a shared services agreement, because the chief complaint of the residents who are most inconvenienced by the closing of this bridge object to that 1.8 miles, not because of the length of it, but because it's a narrow winding road. If there was any way that we could work with the town of Awarsing on a shared services arrangement, I think it would be more cost effective and be a quicker time frame if we were to work with the town to help them widen the road a little bit and straighten out, you know, some of the sharper curves. It's just food for thought. I haven't done that analysis yet, but I do think it's worth taking a good, careful look at. I really do believe we should be talking to the town of Awarsing as we go about making that decision.
So you have not reached out to them at this juncture?
No, we've talked to them. Tony Pays is the highway superintendent. He's aware. We have talked to him, but we haven't talked about any kind of a concept about shared services agreements so that we could help them with Sportsman's Road is the road we're talking about. If Sportsman's Road was in decent shape, I don't think there would be much inconvenience to the residents.
So Legislator Guevaras, who represents that district, had to go to another meeting. I will follow up with him, but I think that makes sense, and particularly if we can save some money on this and still meet the needs of the community. So thank you for that.
And shorten the time frame.
Yeah. Okay, so any other questions on this one? All right, let's go to page 51, bridge substructure repairs.
So this is a good segue because much of what was just discussed on that last capital is what this and the next capital are. It is our, preventative repairs so that we can prolong the life of these bridges.
So this capital and the next capital, this is for the substructure, which is the cement, the concrete, if you will, the abutments, the piers, and once they deteriorate beyond a certain point, the bridge has to be completely replaced. So this is the most fundamental structure of the bridge.
And these are the three bridges that you have highlighted here in the project description.
Yeah.
In Rosendale Bridge, the Coins Bridge.
In Mount Marion Park.
And Leg Mills.
Yes.
Okay.
And our engineers do estimate that it will add 10 more years to the life of the bridge.
Of each one, yeah.
Of each one.
So, to me, that's money well spent.
Yeah.
Okay, do we have any questions on this? Legislator Bartels.
That is the perfect segue, but I actually just want to ask, I don't know if this is, you can stop me if it's out of order, but on the, because I don't know, are we going to be going through the other resolutions, the other projects, the ones that aren't flagged as new ones?
At the beginning I said we'll go through the list of new ones, and then if there are follow-ups on other items in the capital plan, we'll do that after we get through the new ones.
Because we're talking about bridges, can I just ask, and it's something following on what Don said earlier, said you used every bit of the money that had been, that Legislator Litz talked about, that had been set aside in terms of immediate emergency response, smaller repairs that don't require a capital, and that's a joint capital on page 50. Is prior years we had flagged $100,000, and here you say each year you're going to put a 5% increase. Is that going to be adequate based on last year's spending, do you think, based on the lifespan of the bridges that we have, or do we need to put more money in that? Because to both Legislator Fabiano's point about our priorities as a county and Legislator Litz's point about the monies in terms of making these emergency immediate responses, I just want to make sure we have enough money in there for that. I know this is a tight budget cycle, but.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't mean to give you a vague answer, but there's no easy way to answer that because a lot of the emergency bridge flag response repairs are based off of flags that we receive from the state. So there's no real way for us to tell how many flags we're going to receive next year. But I'll tell you.
But what did we spend last year? You said we spent every bit of money. Did we go beyond the 100,000?
Well, we can't go beyond it. We did take a little money out of operating. We do have some bridge materials in there, but we touched five bridges with that 100,000. Three of them were $5,000 or less, and two of them were about $40,000 each.
Okay.
So
just to get a clarification on that, Don, would you be able to break down which of them were they all red flags that got that?
So I actually have it for you, if you'll indulge me for a second. It was $3,400 worth of asphalt on the Boodle Hole Bridge, $1,700 for stone, item 4 on the Limekill Bridge, $5,000 for stone strong at the number 4 hang glider bridge, $38,000 for Shotcrete on the Govan Bridge, and $42,000 for Shotcrete on the Fox Hollow Bridge.
And were those all red flags, or were they a combination of yellow and red?
Tom, I'm not sure if they were red flags, but they
combination.
Yeah.
I think because some of the yellow flags, that's when you need to step in to try to do some preventative maintenance so it doesn't develop into
a
red flag. And we there are bridges that the state wants us to limit to 3 tons, and you just can't do that. It's not viable to do that. So we like if the state says 3 tons, we like to look for alternatives that we can up the tonnage to maybe 9. Tons at a minimum. That's really where we want to be with these bridges, so that highway equipment can get across it to do winter maintenance, and so that people's oil trucks can cross the bridge. In Bennett Road, when that was a 3-ton bridge, school buses should not have been going over it, but they were. So, and that really wears down the remaining structural integrity of the bridge. So yes, it's a combination of yellow and red flags, Lynn.
And Tracy, to answer your question a little bit, if it turns out we get the $100,000 next year and we spend it by May or June, nothing stops us really from coming back to the legislature and saying this is the position we're in. We may have more yellow and red flags in the second half of the year. We might need additional funds to address those now instead of waiting for that to happen.
Were there bridges you did not address due to lack of funds?
Well, I would say there are 2 bridges that we need the bridge crew to get to before winter. One of them is Sundown. The other is Turnwood. Both of these bridges are essential to one of them. The Sundown Bridge is like a 60-mile detour. And Turnwood is essential to a municipal highway department. We need to up the weight limits of those bridges, and we need our engineer to design the fix and the bridge crew to get to those before we're in winter maintenance months. So those are 2 bridges that we're still going to have to figure out how we're going to do, and that they appropriately ought to be in the flag capital. So I would say it is short. It is short.
So, I mean, I think we, the legislature, need to flag this for this budget cycle, that this, I mean, if we're hearing, this is not something we want to be short on, you know, and if we're right now, we're in 2020 and we're hearing we're potentially, we've expended the full budget line on this and we have 2 bridges that we need to get to and that this may be short for next year. So, I mean.
And these were unforeseen, just to be clear, Tracy.
Tom, that's exactly what we're talking about. I mean, this money is for unforeseen.
Yeah.
If it were foreseen, then we'd be able to very accurately budget for it. But I think with aging infrastructure, we want to make sure that we have enough so that your department can handle these things when they come up unforeseen, because they have a tremendous impact on the people of our county.
Yeah, they do.
So, I mean, I know I'm going to be flagging this for further discussion in the budget cycle, in the budget proper.
We've been doing this now 2 years or 3, is that correct, where we've had this pool for
This was fixes? The first year last year.
2020.
It was the first year.
2020.
Okay. So you don't really have any history to say, here's what we're anticipating.
Right. But you do have
the age of the bridge. Do you know what bridges are getting inspected, or you send out engineers, correct?
No, the state DOT sends out engineers. They inspect every bridge every year. Some bridges as Herb explained, if there's a red flag on it, they'll come out even more often than that. They monitor it for safety purposes. We don't, I mean, our engineers look at them, but we respond to the flags.
And do we have any, other than the 2 you just mentioned, any other additional red flags or potential red flags?
Well, until we get them, we don't know.
Okay. And do they come out once a year?
No, they come out throughout the year. They'll send us notices.
Okay. All right. So there's really no way to anticipate.
No. Unfortunately.
Okay. Okay. Any other questions? All right. Let's move on to 52 superstructure repairs.
So this is the steel.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is the steel, that's the structure that's resting on the concrete substructure. And this identifies 7 bridges.
I see. And this is just to start the process. Pardon me?
I got you covered, Tom. I went and got my crystal ball.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, any questions on this? Okay, so I think let's move on to page 58, the Galeville Bridge replacement. Okay, any questions here? This is Legislator Bartel.
With this timeline, are we anticipating avoiding a closure of the bridge other than to do the improvement, not a closure in advance of the improvement?
That's anticipated, yes.
Great.
I see. We don't have total control of that because of the state, but yes. And, you know, this is for construction in 2023, so yes. We're trying to anticipate this replacement far enough in advance. We know that this is, would be a very difficult bridge to have closed for very long.
Yes, I'm on that bridge almost every day. So
it's quite a long bridge.
Yeah, thank you.
It's a 300-foot span.
And so this is work just to help continue till you can replace it, correct?
Well, this is replacement.
It's the start of replacement. Okay.
Yeah. It's
in 2023, we'll go to construction and spend $4.25 million.
Okay.
Can I ask a question about just bridge design, just a sort of general question? We don't have to spend a lot of time on it. But, you know, the bridge we did in New Paltz, which what a beautiful job you did on that bridge. I mean, that really pretty remarkable. You know, I notice as I drive around the county how different just the fact that it has that like natural, I don't know what you would describe it as, but like that rusted look to it versus being painted bright red or bright blue. Is there a move to shift to that generally, or Herb shaking his head no, or are we sticking with the bright blue, bright red look?
I can tell you why.
Okay.
For many, that's called Core 10 steel.
Mm-hmm.
It's self-rusting steel. It anneals itself. And for many years, we did, especially in parks and places like that, use Core 10 steel. What we found out since then is in members that do not circulate air, like guide rail, they rust from the inside out, and some of the Core 10 guide rail you can walk up to with your hand and push a hole in it. So if you can get air in and around the members, like the steel on the Liberty Bridge, it's great to do that. But there's certain designs that you can't use Core 10 steel because they will prematurely collapse.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Page 59, Golden Hill Roads.
So this is just asphalt and rehab of that whole complex. We also, I think, charged back the skilled nursing facility for a portion of this work. Tom, is that correct, Don?
That is correct, and that'll also apply to the proposed residential development goes forward, and that's conveyed outside the county. They will also share in the cost of capital improvements and other things. But I would say this, in discussing this project in-house, we believe that the pavement of the road is sufficient, that we should wait until the decisions are made on construction, because there's going to be major construction in association with the jail, the demolishing of that and whatever it becomes. But then also, we're going to be talking about a water tank up by the health department. There's going to be a lot of construction, a lot of large trucks on this road. So we feel it would be appropriate to delay this. However, the capital is important to us because there are some parking areas that can be addressed in this. There are some places that need some work. We would like to see the capital move forward, but we don't have any intention of paving that road until construction is substantially complete in these areas. And the only other thing I want to point out is that this road is not considered a public road. It is owned outright by the county. It's not on the DOT list of roads, and so it's not on the CHIPS list. We think that's a shame, given that this is essentially going to be a public road going forward. We think there ought to be a discussion about who ought to be responsible for maintaining that road going forward. I think that would be after this capital project is done and the road is brought to snuff. But then I think that discussion needs to be had. If the city was responsible for maintaining this, they could get funding for that. The county can't get funding for this because it's a county road in the city.
Legislator Litz, then Bartels, then Walter. Herb, you're on mute.
I had two comments and a question. The first comment you already brought up, that if we're going to be doing a lot of construction up there, you know, we pave it and then they run track equipment over it. So I think it's very wise to wait until that is all done.
Right.
The second thing is, because you're going to have like Golden Hill and whatever, there's private entities up there now. So it does serve the public, not just the county's assets.
Right.
And there's no reason you can't petition the state and add that as a county road, which would qualify for CHIPS funds because it's for the public. It's no longer the driveway to the UCAT system. So I think you should investigate that. My question was, for this amount of money, are we doing this with our new paver, or are you going to put it out to contract?
We were contemplating doing this in-house with the new paver. That's why you see the cost where it is. That's materials. But Herb, I'll have to investigate this. I was under the understanding that a county can't have a county road, public county road in the city limits. So I have to investigate that.
Legislator Bartels, Walter, then Heppner.
So does that mean you want to move the capital back to 2022?
No, because we want to fund part of the parking lots out of it. So ideally, we'd like to keep it where it is, and we'd come to you in either January or February, whenever, with the price for the parking lots and only use part of this money. And then next year, we would come to you for this other part.
Okay. And then I just want to point out you have a typo in the, because it says it's not ineligible. So you just want to double negative, just it's not eligible for CHIPS.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh, thank you.
No problem. Okay. And I think everything that Commissioner Jackson just brought up makes perfect sense, both in terms of delaying and starting the discussion about the turnover of the road, ideally, you know, having that discussion sooner than later. Thank you.
Yeah, so I guess a few of my comments were addressed, including the typo, but I guess I feel like, first of all, I guess I would like to understand how much of this is, you know, what the cost of the parking, and you say you have it in there so that the following year it's sort of a placeholder, but there seems to be just so many maybes because we don't know what's happening in the renovations of the old jail. We don't know whether we can convert it. So I guess I just feel, I wonder why, whether it even makes sense, rather than just have this address, the parking that you do actually need to do, and put that amount in there. And then, you know, we're not gonna have the answer to all of those other ifs until next year anyway. I mean, to know what's, you know, the idea of doing those renovations of the old jail and actually having them done, so that we then know what's happening with it and then who's covering for paving. So it just seems like it doesn't make sense to me to not just have this be about the parking lot that needs to happen now.
Can I address that, Lynn, real quick?
Yes, go ahead.
Just, we do have an obligation to the nursing home to fix the road. I don't think that we would get the city of Kingston to take the road, which they aren't required to do. They would have to agree to do it until we do this full asphalt overlay. Tom had brought up that we would do that work and then try to transfer the road to the city. And going forward, it would be CHIPS funding. I don't think the city would be willing to take the road unless it was in better shape than it is now.
I guess I'm just saying that Tom said the overlay is not going to happen until all this other stuff is done, including the renovations of a major renovation. And that seems like it's going to not be done for another year. And so I'm not just referring to the transfer. I'm referring to the idea that the actual laying of the pavement seems to be farther out than a, yeah.
So Legislator Heppner, then Litz.
Yeah, so I think I agree with a lot that's been quickly digested here, especially from Commissioner Jackson, what you said about, you know, looking into that, and Legislator Lips followed up on, but kind of going off of what Legislator Walter is saying, I would be more curious. So I understand the need for more immediate parking paving, surface paving. I'd be more interested to see what percentage and where that surface paving is occurring versus, you know, this broad of a capital project before approving this broad of a capital project. Because maybe that's the immediate need we address, and then we look at that. But I'm curious of just what percentage of this capital project goes to that parking aspect, which I totally understand may need to be done and can be done faster than in terms of, you know, waiting out the multiple RFPs and all that. That's the information I think I would like looking at this capital project, percentage of the funding that would actually be going towards the actual current need. But it makes logical sense that we would wait upon construction on some of the other parts of the property.
I think what we can do to kind of answer both Legislator Walter's questions and what you just brought up, Legislator Heppner, is that we can try to estimate some numbers for 2021 for the parking lot at UCAT, the parking lot at the health department, and come back to you with an amended capital that includes 2021 funding that's just the parking lots, and then 2022 or even 2023 for the cost of the Golden Hill Drive overlay.
So yes, Mark, we would estimate the cost of what needs to be done, including some patching of the road, by the way, which isn't the full, you know, overlay of the road, but some patching of the road and some areas in parking lots and driveways that need it. We'll come up with an estimate of that work, identify that for the 2021 capital, and delay the rest of it until later years.
That makes sense. Legislator Lips, you had a couple questions.
Well, that was going to be my suggestion, is to take the money, because this is a five-year plan, and this work will be done in that five-year plan, mm-hmm. and try to break it down to what's going to be done in 2021, what's going to happen in the future. But I think we need to keep it as a complete capital project. Because when it comes time that the old jail property is developed and they have to kick in money, this is where they're going to kick it. They're going to kick it into this capital project line. so it doesn't get lost in the black hole of the general budget or whatever. So it needs to be in here in part of this. So we should keep it as one capital project and then splay it out over the number of years when each section is going or each phase is going to kick in that year.
Right. We can do that.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Let's move on to the guardrail replacement program. Now, I have page 68, but I don't think that's correct.
Page 60.
Thank you. There was an error then in the index. So could you correct that, Don? I think that's where we picked it up. Thank you. 60. Great. Okay, any questions on this?
Yeah.
Legislator Walter.
So I'm just wondering if there's like, I see you have this, you're equally distributing the budget off all the years. It's very just as needed, I suppose. But is there some priority list? I mean, similar to bridges where you have the yellow, green, and red. But, you know, do you have some kind of sense of which ones of these you would need to get to sooner or later?
Yes, we have a list right now. We haven't been able to get to this work in 2020, in part because of COVID and other contingencies. But this work is largely required by automobile accidents that damage rail. And so the rail needs to be fixed. It's not a lot in any one year. It's not a lot of money, and it's not a lot of work, but it needs to be done in order to keep up with liability issues. Once the guide rail is damaged and it's not fixed, it represents a increased liability to the county for any subsequent accidents. So yes, we have a list of the fixes that need to be made that we haven't been able to get to. We would like to move into this type of capital to do this because it's repetitive. It's every year.
And so do you have some historical data that says this tends to cover it, or you've been tracking it for how long?
We've been paying it out of operating with in-house labor, and this would be a new contracted cost to come out of capital. So unfortunately, no, we don't have historical data.
Yeah, but I mean, Brendan used historical data on how many hours, how many man,
right,
how much material. So this is definitely an informed number. It's not a,
correct, yes.
It's not a wag.
Okay. Any other questions? And my bad, Don, it was my error on the page number. Your index was correct.
Oh, it's so. Bert's index, Don.
Oh, Bert's index. Okay, Bert, sorry about that.
We weren't going to say anything, Lynn.
Well, I'm owning it. Thank you, Tom. Okay, so the next one is page 63, McKinstry Bridge. Legislator Bartels.
This is the project I was referencing before. I don't have to go into it, but again, it's the bridge is already closed, and there are businesses and residents that are affected with, with the detour. And I think waiting to construct for 2022, and I'm not suggesting that you're dragging your feet. I just think it's a really long time, and I'm urging you to please find a way to shorten this timeline, which would mean needing to move some of this capital into 2021 in an ideal world.
So just to give you a heads up, we're coming to you in November for design.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions on this one?
No, I'm sorry. Tracy, I believe we're coming to you in December, not November. We're coming from Maltby Hollow in November. My apologies.
That's okay. I mean, it just even that reflects a shortened timeline. And I know that you hear me on the urgency. And I don't feel this just because it's in my district. It's in any place where we have a bridge that's closed, that's affecting people. I think we should be moving to get it fixed as quickly as possible or replaced as quickly as possible.
And after you and I spoke, Legislator Bartels, I did talk to Tom, and we are going to try to work with the business to get improved wayfinder signs so that the detour makes more sense to people and hear some of their concerns.
Thank you so much.
So one update on this capital is that it says in the second sentence of the description that it was posted for a 20-ton load. So subsequent to the submission of this to the county executive as a capital in August, the state downgraded the weight limit to 3 tons. And subsequent to that, our own inspection revealed that the decking was coming loose. The decking is part of the superstructure. It was coming loose from the substructure. And, you know, we witnessed very large trucks, including garbage trucks, go across this bridge. There was no stopping them. We talked to them. They just don't hear it. So we had to close it for safety reasons. But we hear you, Tracy, and we will move this along as quickly as we can.
Yeah, and I don't want to be misunderstood. I absolutely trust your decisions based on safety, and I'm not calling that into question. I'm not asking that the bridge be reopened while we wait. I'm just saying that if we can expedite, that would be great.
Okay, any other questions on this? Okay, let's move to page 64, the New Paltz substation parking lot. And this will all be done in-house, correct?
Correct.
Yes. Yep. It's materials.
Okay. Any other questions on this one? Okay, let's move to Phoenicia Bridge Replacement, page 66. Any questions on this one?
How many more bridges are there in Phoenicia? Seems like feels like we're replacing bridges in Phoenicia forever, right?
Any questions on this one? Legislator Bartels.
Just in keeping. So this bridge is currently open?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
And it's not, we're not anticipating a closure prior to the actual work being done, correct?
We're not.
Okay.
But we think we have to get ahead of this in terms of planning.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of work to be done, a lot of groundwork to be done in terms of partnering up with stakeholders for grants. We think that this is a great opportunity because this is a stream constriction. This bridge should be both longer and higher. And it's already a very long bridge. I don't think we have the span. So we think we need to get ahead of this in terms of grants and design. That's why it's got such a long timeline to construction.
Can I ask, I mean, in the project detail, it says that if funding is received, a consultant will be hired to begin the survey, stakeholder outreach, and design. What if funding isn't received?
We're still going to have to do it, but we look for grants first always.
Okay, but we're not going to delay.
Right, no, we won't delay, but we believe that there are grant sources out there for this because of the need to relieve the stream constriction.
Is this one of those that as a result of the flooding from Irene that requires us to raise this?
Well, it was damaged
okay.
from that flooding.
Okay.
And it no longer, it does not meet what they call the 100-year flood. I'm not sure what flood it meets, whether it even meets the 50-year flood. So it gets damaged from impounding water. And it's a stream constriction, which isn't good for the stream. So
right.
there are a lot of entities to partner with that have an interest in fixing this.
Good. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Let's move on to page 78, the broadband initiative.
Sure. So this is an initiative. This initial year is just to do the feasibility study, but we're looking at getting fixed wireless broadband to areas. There's lots of areas in the county that don't have adequate broadband. We're going to seek funding on this as well, but this initial 2021 is for a feasibility study.
I'll get your new heating pad on the way home tomorrow, okay?
Okay, Legislator Bartels.
I think that I'm happy to see this with numbers attached to it. This is something that we've been talking about for years. Legislator Archer wrote the initial policy. Now it's, I don't know how many years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. I'm wondering, in terms of the 2022 and 2023 estimates, those numbers seem very low. How did you arrive at those, if that's implementation, how did you come at those numbers?
Mark, if you want to jump in, this is a plan. Well, it's economic development, but
yeah,
you know, Dennis did a lot of these numbers as well.
Yep, Dennis has the details. So if we want to get into the nitty gritty, we can get that from him. But I can just say that based on some experience that we had with a pilot program, looking at feasibility of this equipment in Ellenville, which was a small part of the Ellenville million, we found that the equipment costs are really, really low. So the equipment is cheap. The cost is really in doing the assessment of the towers that you're going to place that equipment on, and then hiring licensed certified contractors to climb those towers and install that equipment. And, you know, on that front, it's possible that even DPW, I don't know if you guys manage some of those contracts for emergency services, but we have some experience with that through our emergency services and the emergency communication system.
And I know as we build out our towers for our interoperability, which is what Steve Peterson's been working on for several years now, but getting closer and closer to fruition, I know we were setting up so that those towers could have extra capacity and have broadband, et cetera, placed on them.
Legislator Walter.
So, you know, it sounds like you have a pretty good sense of where we need these. And this is such a huge need. Is there any way we can move this timeline up? I mean, it just sort of seems a shame to wait to 2023 till everyone can have the broadband, especially given that, you know, I mean, even without a feasibility study, I bet you could probably guess exactly where these should go. And there might be, as you have up there, some existing towers that could be worked on and just hiring those people to do the job. So is there some way we can have this happen sooner?
So, Mark, if I can also just chime in that I think, you know, part of what takes a while here is that it's complicated work, because not only we know where the service need is, but the engineering of looking at the tower loads and then looking at the service areas that can be broadcast from those towers actually is a fairly complicated analysis. And, you know, I think we also have to grapple with who's going to actually operate and maintain a service that actually can be used, that can use this infrastructure to provide broadband service to individual residents or businesses. So there's a lot of that it feels like we wouldn't want to move too quickly to spend a lot of money on equipment and on installing that equipment if we don't have a viable path to figuring out how we're going to actually sustain a service provision over that equipment. But I can say that, you know, for one, I think that this should be a priority, and I'm glad to hear you think so too. And maybe we can talk internally about whether we can accelerate some of the timelines.
Right. At least maybe keep 2021 where it is and combine the 23 and 22.
Right.
Legislator Haynes. Sorry.
Just to be clear, so this is not necessarily a study to see what areas lack broadband, correct?
Right.
That's feasibility of the existing towers and the infrastructure.
Okay. Because the governor just did sign a broadband feasibility and accessibility plan that would pass in both the Senate and the Assembly this year. Just in July, I believe he signed it. We Legislator Walter said, we know where the issues are. So we're not going to study where we're lacking broadband, correct?
Correct. No,
that's been studied a lot over the last few years. So I think we know pretty well. And where we don't know, the town supervisors generally know, and you can just ask them where the service is lacking. So.
Legislator Bartels.
Yeah, I just want to follow on Legislator Walter's comment for what it's worth, and also say that I strongly support accelerating this in the coming years. Nothing wasteful, but it's just, you know, I think you're right, Tim. I mean, we know where these areas are, and COVID has really exposed in a much greater way what that lack of accessibility means. I mean, I've talked about this before, but I had a friend who lived in an area of Gardner on the border of Rochester and had no ability to get any broadband, and she would have to drive down the mountain and park on the hairpin turn to, you know, reach into work. And they moved because of that. They're still in Ulster County, but the reality is, with COVID, with remote learning, with remote working, it's unacceptable to have the have and the have nots in this regard. And I think we have to do whatever we can to equalize and make it accessible for all. So I strongly support that as well. And I will strongly support it moving forward in the legislature as it relates to budget and funding, et cetera. So just so you know, that's where I stand too.
Deputy Ryder, then Legislator Heppner.
Yeah, and so I think we can expedite where the towers are. I think if you look at the Capitol on page 43, which is that interoperability, a bulk of that construction of those towers is in 22, and we need those tower sites for this Capitol. So that's a little bit, I mean, that's a $9 million Capitol. So to rush that is a little bit more difficult, but where there are public towers that we can utilize, we can definitely work to get the Wi-Fi, the broadband in those areas.
Legislator Heppner.
Yeah, I just, you know, wanted to add on again, you know, per what's been said. I know, Legislator Archer, this is something you've been talking about for a long time. But, you know, and I think that's a great idea because, you know, in my districts, for example, it's not just, you know, the Silver Hollow, the Shady, Hamlet of Shady, and, you know, those more rural parts of my district that where those existing infrastructure, those towers might not exist. It's also in my district in West Hurley, right off of 28, where those folks and people that have moved here that want to bring small businesses here literally can't get a service from Time Warner to their Spectrum now to their house. So especially like in the short term, like Legislator Walter said, I think this is something Tim said in speaking, the locations are known. You call me up, Tim, I can tell you right what roads in West Hurley can't get a service to them without spending an astronomical amount of money to a private company. I think this is something that if we can expedite, we absolutely should without hesitation.
Anybody else? Well, I will chime in only because it's been a topic on my list for a long time. And I think what we're learning in this whole thing is that the technology is evolving, because what's happening is 5G is allowing wireless to be more efficient and effective than it had in the past. And so the last mile, mid mile issues to get wired to a home were the challenges, but 5G brings something else, and with it some opposition as well, but it is going to be a challenge, and the sooner we can get this out there, I think the better off. Everyone seems to have the cell phone, and even for the lower income families that have struggled to have wired internet, at least having some source of contact and access to the wider world is important. So yes, this is an initiative. In fact, Pat and I spoke about it with your service center, and I'm sure you experienced in your service center what people were lacking in the way of internet access. So we have more information. We should expedite it. I know it's probably aligned with the Empire State initiative around 5G, which is probably what is slowing this down a little bit. But whatever we can do, this is long in coming. It has been, you know, on our radar for many years, and there's still a lot of folks that don't have access, and it does impact our ability to compete. So I think it's really, really important. That's my two cents. Thank you. All right, let's go to...
Hello?
Yeah. Oh, Brian, I'm sorry. I didn't see
That's
you.
Okay. So I just wanted to let you guys know. I think Tracy might be the only one who was around then. Patricia Doxy may have been around then. But in 2006, when I was in the legislature the last time, we proposed this very thing to try and get broadband access to parts of the county. At the time, it wasn't broadband. It was internet access, basically, right, to parts of the county that where it wasn't available. So talk about a long time coming. I mean, I can't agree more with that. And I'm just very glad that we're going to hopefully take some action on this and really, you know, service the parts of the county that really need it, because there are a lot of them. Thanks.
Thanks, Brian. Okay. Anybody else? All right. Let's move on to page 79, Community Development Program. Mark, you want to kind of give us some insight into this, or whoever? I don't know who you're under.
Evelyn and I have worked on this, but I'll let Evelyn kind of kick it off.
Yeah, so this is a renaming and a broadening of what used to be called the Shovel Ready program. So that was a program that would provide county matching funds for economic development purposes. This is just broadening that to include other community development purposes, including housing and health related facilities and other public services. So this is the same idea that a community can propose a project that would get county matching funds for any of those public purposes. Subject to the criteria that it has to be for a public county purpose, and that the county, of course, has to be able to take a property interest in it. Part of this is that the industrial development purpose of the old Shovel Ready program had some state authorizing legislation. We talked about this briefly in the Economic Development Committee earlier this year, and talking about housing strategies specifically, that we may want to early next year go back to the state to update that authorizing legislation so that we can expand that to community development purposes. That would let us do things like water and sewer for facilitating the building of housing.
Okay, any questions? Legislator Bartels.
Yeah, I mean, my questions are more than I can totally formulate right this minute. And I feel like I'm going to have to follow up both in understanding what getting rid of the Shovel Ready program as was previously described is. And this, I mean, this right now sounds a little bit like what was proposed under the previous administration. And I forgot what it was called, but it was $1 million annually to go as, he didn't call it community grants, but it was a community share. And in fact, when the previous exec left office, there were a whole lot of confused promises out there, different communities that said, oh, but, you know, we were going to get a parking lot and we were going to get lights and we were going to get this. And I want to understand one, how, this talks about priority, but what would the process be in determining which projects would, if there were multiple applicants, how would one be chosen over another? How would geographic distribution be determined and insured. And also, I just putting it out there right now, I have concern about putting in $1 million capital project on a regular basis starting in this year, in this financial time, when, you know, just 30 minutes ago we were talking about failing bridges and other challenges. And I've said this before on other subjects, I really am concerned that 2022 in particular is going to be much worse than the 2021 budget. And so I'm not sure about this yet. And I'm going to need to really get a very clear understanding of what this is before I would approve either the capital or $1 million in the budget this year.
Legislator Walter.
So I guess, you know, I see that it says that the definition is economic activity defined as job creation. So it sounds like a pilot to me. And whether it's called a pilot or not, is there a kind of clawback plan? Like if one is that accurate that these are only those activities that would lead to job creation? And then what kind of mechanism would ensure that those promised jobs are actually occur, and what happens if they don't?
So that was the old shovel ready authorizing legislation that sentence is referring to. So that authorizing legislation allowed, for example, the county to do water and sewer infrastructure construction for a site that would then have job producing activity happening on it. So that was the industrial purpose that we have the authorizing legislation for. So if we go back to the state to broaden that to allow us to also do that for other community development purposes, such as housing, that's one way that we can help lower the cost of building housing in the county.
So specifically, housing is the only other expansion?
No, other public purposes. So health and child care are called out as examples here. The language that Dennis has suggested using is broadening industrial development, which is what we have authority for now, to industrial and community development.
But not fund, just to be clear, I'm sorry, because it says on the top, not open space, recreation, or transportation.
Because those are covered under other capital programs.
And so the whole job part might not be a necessary element. There'll be some other kind of expectation.
That's right.
And have you started to formulate some of that criteria and what specific language you're going to appeal to the state to change?
No, we have not. That's something we'd work on with the committee.
Okay. And Manna, did you have a question?
Yes. I think this is another example of how sustainability criteria need to be added. And we did have a very brief but beneficial meeting with IDA. It was mostly on solid waste, but they had the idea that their matrix could be revised to give more points. But if this is sort of a parallel program, I really believe we need to make sure that sustainability criteria are included. About 20 years ago, I said to Maurice Hinchey, Maurice, when he was still in the assembly, any state funding should have sustainability criteria attached to it. And he said something like, "Man, I've been pushing for sustainability criteria since before you were born," just a little bit of an exaggeration. But, you know, I feel like a broken record, but I'm not going to give up. It's really critical if we're putting funding to commercial ventures, to construction, to housing, that it be very clear that there are sustainability criteria
attached to that. It's not just about jobs. It's not just about development. So, you know, I would like to know what you're doing in that regard.
Deputy Wright, do you have a response on that?
Yeah, I think those are all good suggestions. This is something that, you know, really the county executive asked us to look at broadening this, and especially in line with facilitating housing. So this is a recent addition to the capital program. And I think, you know, all of your suggestions about what needs to be built into the process and the criteria are really valuable ones. I'll just say that, you know, in regards to Legislator Bartel's comment previously, this is not eliminating the Shovel Ready program. It's really a broadening of it. And I think, you know, that program has been undersubscribed. So, you know, certainly we should look at, and I'm not familiar with the history that you mentioned, but, you know, what's been done in the past and what we can learn from that in putting together the process for applying for and selecting projects for this. So all good suggestions.
Legislator Bartel.
Again, I mean, I feel like a little bit like I'm a broken record this year, and it's kind of counter to my natural optimistic personality, trying to see the bright side of things on a regular basis. I mean, I have been called a Pollyanna, but I'm not going to sound like one right now. Right now, we're in the process of being asked to utilize the tax stabilization fund. We're drawing down our full contingency. We're heading into a budget that's very tight. And this is $1 million going out to projects outside the county when we're also discussing whether or not we have enough for bridges. And we just heard from the commissioner that we probably don't. So I just think that maybe this isn't the time. Like, we can have the academic conversation about this, but I don't know that I am prepared to support $1 million in this budget for this as a theoretical conversation for down the road when the county's in a better position. I really do worry about where we're headed and the terrible struggle that our residents are going to be feeling. And I know that that's a tough balance because we want to support development and support projects that will help get people back on their feet. But I just don't know that we're there yet or that I'm there to support $1 million in this fund. And I haven't seen it in the budget. I'm assuming, is it in the economic development line? Where is this $1 million as a capital? It's not in the budget at all?
It's just in the capital program.
It's just part of the capital program, Tracy.
That's it. Okay.
Okay, any other comments on this one? Okay, let's move to page 82, Enterprise West Redevelopment.
I'd love to share my screen. I think Evelyn and I were going to walk you through a quick presentation to give you a little bit more detail on this. Can somebody enable that? Is that okay?
I can share my screen with your presentation.
Perfect.
Okay.
As that comes up, I think Evelyn will walk you through an overview of kind of the effort to date on the formerly known as Tech City property, which the project is renaming for at least the time being Enterprise West Redevelopment Project. Not very sexy, but it kind of gets the point across, I think. So, and then I'll dive into the capital project and kind of explain a little bit more detail about what's in those numbers and why we think it's important.
Yes, so in the presentation, we start by sharing some of the same information that we shared in the presentation on the legislative leadership call. I think this was back in late August. I know several of you were not able to be there and wish to be, and we haven't found another time to give that presentation to others. That may be something we want to talk about with the with the Economic Development Committee, if that's a good venue for it later in the year. But we just wanted to share a little information when the slides come up about where we are with the overall property and the vision, some of the fact finding that we've done in the vision for what we have there.
All
Okay, we're just working out some technical difficulties.
Sorry, we weren't the host. Tim, you should be able to share your screen now.
Yep, I'm going to do it now.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. All right, Evelyn, I'll forward as you go.
All right. So, yes, Tim mentioned the site formerly known as Tech City. We're going to get away from using that name. And, Tim, if you want to go to the first slide. So, you know, I think several of you alluded to this in some of the budget discussions last week. It's really important that we take the time to vision the revitalization of this entire site. And I think what we're coming to is that it's really the time to start thinking about transforming this site back into the jewel of the Ulster County economy that we know that it can be. In talking with folks about this site, I think everybody is envisioning some kind of live, work, play mix. And there's a lot to figure out in terms of what exactly that mix looks like. But we all have the intuition that this, you know, given its location, its bones, that this can really be a site that can attract residents, visitors, and a real range of companies that are offering a high quality jobs in a lot of different areas. So on the next slide, the map that you're looking at here has the various parcels that the site is broken up to color coded in terms of ownership status and tax delinquency status. So the parcels that are in orange here are the parcels that the county owns. And the one in the middle that Tim is pointing to, that's the parcel with the buildings that we often call the Bank of America buildings, along with their parking lot, which the county took possession of finally this past spring in foreclosure. Along with to the left there, that's a 57-acre open parcel that stretches down to the Esopus. On the east campus, the various buildings are in different stages of tax delinquency, and so we have a multi-year process unfolding on the east campus in terms of the county being able to gain control of those properties and get them back into reuse. So on the next slide, you know, I think it's really important that we get clear about what's held the site back over time, because we find in the community really widespread and largely inaccurate perception that there are insurmountable environmental barriers left over from IBM. And when we look into the history, a big portion of the problem is just that Ginsburg's various LLCs have not been able to close deals over the last 20 years. And in talking with some of the regional economic development organizations, including ESD, there's a sense of Tech City fatigue, that they just don't even want to hear about Tech City anymore because there have been so many failed deals over time. But we know that this remains a really highly attractive site. And so we really need to change the narrative within the community and then within the broader economic development community about the site and really create some momentum around it. And that's what we're trying to do with the West Campus buildings. Just to mention briefly the environmental situation, I'm happy to talk with anybody more about this offline. But, you know, we've had some extensive conversations with DEC about where they are with IBM on this and been through all of their documentation. There's a long-term management process that's going on with IBM where they've detailed all the various issues on the site and an IBM management plan for all of them. And so those groundwater issues are largely manageable. There are procedures around who you have to notify and what you have to monitor if you're going to dig on the site. But really, those are manageable. The bigger issues are the issues that Ginsburg has created with his asbestos handling, and we're working with EPA on remediating those and holding Ginsburg accountable for that. But the very good news is that the West Campus buildings that the county owns have minimal to no environmental issues and are really ready to reuse. So just briefly, 2019 was the foreclosure process. Once we got the deed in November, we got in there and did a first assessment of the buildings and found out to our surprise and relief that the buildings were really well winterized. In contrast to the East Campus buildings, the asbestos was correctly mitigated, and the buildings are in really surprisingly good shape. The legal wrangling with Ginsburg went on until April. And then in May, when we had, final possession, then we began the work to separate the electricity and gas from the East Campus. That work is now complete. And we spent the summer doing an informal consultation and feasibility assessment to get a sense of both what we could use those buildings for, but also really what the market conditions are in the environment that we're in. And so we talked with folks across the commercial realty space, regional economic development professionals, talked with architecture and development communities, agencies, including not just DEC and ESD, but also HVEDC, and then talking with various groups of folks that are looking for space, folks at Bard and SUNY New Paltz, folks in the arts and music community, businesses that are looking for space, and community groups, to try to get some sense again of what the market for this space looks like right now. And so the takeaways that we took from those conversations is that there really is a significant market opportunity right now for adaptive reuse of those buildings. And I say reuse because the demand for large-scale office space right now is, of course, very low. But there's a high demand for flexible manufacturing space, light industrial uses, maker space, and other uses, given, as we know, the flight of folks looking to get out of high-density areas and up into areas like this. And so, you know, what we're thinking is that we have an opportunity here to generate some activity here, get some paying tenants in with a mix of uses, potentially tenants that may be looking to relocate up here and would like a short-term kind of landing pad space while they look for their forever space, which may be in that building or maybe across the street when those facilities become available or elsewhere in the county. We're also hearing a lot from the arts and music community that they're having a hard time finding affordable space, getting priced out of space that they currently have in the area. And so we're looking at a phased approach with mixed uses of tenants across that sort of arts, manufacturing, and maker economy. And using those existing buildings as a way to start bringing in revenues and also building momentum and changing the narrative about the site. With the idea that the county will, in the short term, retain oversight of the property, potentially surplusing the property to a local development corporation to actually own it and manage it, and then partner with providers to help us with marketing the property, managing the property, and enlisting other sources of capital. An LDC would enable us to apply for grants to do some of the more renovations of the space. So that's what we're looking at as a way forward in the short term for that property. And then in the long term, seeing how that approach goes and whether the county wants to or the LDC wants to sell the property, to a developer with a developer's agreement in place to continue that kind of mixed use development there, or how the market conditions change over time. So I'll let Tim take over here and talk about the condition of the buildings and then get into the capital program.
Thanks, everyone. And I'll try to be quick. I know everybody's tired. And I want to give a shout out to Tom and Don and the DPW team who have helped so much in kind of thinking through the condition of the building and what's going to be needed to bring it up to usable condition. So first thing, for those that aren't familiar, it's about 400,000 square feet in three interconnected buildings, mostly large open rooms. These were cubicle rooms with sometimes hundreds of cubicles per room. In fact, the room at the bottom here, I think, might have had more than hundreds, up to 1,000. And overall, as Evelyn pointed out, it's in surprisingly good condition. I think my perception even was that all of Tech City was, you know, a mess and everything was ready to fall down. These buildings were largely renovated with new building systems and a new roof in 2005 when the Bank of America and their subcontractors were in there doing tax filings. It has working loading docks and a freight elevator. It is established on a fiber connection that brings it to the high bandwidth backhaul network along the thruway. Has lots of egress and ingress so that it can be effectively subdivided into separate spaces. We worked through a feasibility study process with Scott Dutton of Dutton Architecture, and partly because I think as we thought about the future of this building, and I'll talk about this very briefly at the end, there's a lot of lessons that have been learned by Scott in his redevelopment of the Fuller Building in Midtown, which has kind of suggested a pent-up demand for the kinds of spaces that we think could be accommodated in this building. So we looked at the building codes and allowable uses under zoning, and then identified the potential to subdivide and separate the building into separate leasable areas. The ground floor obviously is attractive for heavier uses, manufacturing uses, and could easily be separated into spaces ranging from 1,000 to up to 30,000 square feet. All of the walls are movable. There are pillars with 24-on-24 spacing, 24 feet between the pillars, and those are the only structural elements in the building. And the upper floors are also suitable for some heavier uses. They have load-bearing floors that can sustain some weight, but seem more appropriate for things like office, education, studio, or research space. We've been working through DPW and Buildings and Grounds to kind of assess the condition of the building. And as you know, in the spring, we had some discussion about getting the building ready for a potential emergency use. I know that that's a subject that we've kind of beat to death, so I won't belabor it. But the effect of that was to separate the utilities, the natural gas and the electricity off of the main campus of Tech City, which was an obvious important first step if we're going to do anything with this property. And so in the end, what we've assessed is that building 101, which is the southernmost building, a two-story building, 66,000 square feet per floor, is mostly ready for occupancy. And so the first phase of the capital project that we proposed is really to get that building in a condition where it can be maintained without further deterioration through the winter and be initially ready for minimal occupancy standards, so that as we decide collectively with you all what the path forward is, we can be ready to seize opportunities that we know are out there immediately and hopefully will continue to be out there as we progress into the winter and spring and into next year. The other two buildings, which really kind of look like one building if you look at it aerially, have a bit more to go in terms of getting the building systems up and running. The heat and the cooling and the ventilation are going to require more work. But those are kind of mothballed at this point and ready to do that work when the time comes. And you can see the kind of basic stats of those buildings there. This is just a snapshot of the capital project that you guys have already seen. You know, I think it's really important to just frame it, though, as, you know, we took seriously the entirely reasonable request that you guys put forward of, you know, before we start spending real money, lots more real money on a building like this, we want to have a sense of what the long-term picture here is. And so we've put together that long-term picture. I think March has got a question. She's waving her hand.
Yeah, if you don't mind, the $399 of prior years that was spent here, that does not match the year-to-date that was given out, you know, in the last report. And is that because this is anticipated another, you know, $99,000 this year? Could you just...
Yeah, I'll explain that. I'm going to come to that in a second here.
Okay, thank you.
It's my next slide. I'll get to that specifically on one of the subsequent slides, but good point. I want to just kind of give, it's a complex capital project that when we dig past the kind of basic numbers that are in the capital project sheet that we fill out for these things, there's a lot going on. So I wanted to try to unpack it for you. So the thing that I think you're pointing out, March, is that we have spent already Actually, it's slightly more than this number, 283,500. We're expecting 60,000 in rebates from Central Hudson for the gas and electric work once we activate the gas. So that'll be net of that rebate. That's been spent. That was spent earlier in the year. I see Tracy has a question.
Just on that, that's a rebate. I didn't understand that it was a rebate on the work. I understood that they were going to give, basically not charge us for the electric.
Yes.
A rebate
it's a gas rebate. Gas. It's a gas rebate.
Right. So we're not going to get charged for gas usage versus.
So we've already outlaid 343.5.
So that's with that 60 added back in. Yeah, we, yeah, okay. Is Tom, that's your understanding too, Tom or Don, do you guys know?
Yes, we will get a rebate in the gas purchase over time.
So, yes. You know, I guess let's consider that, you know, a cost that we should add that 60 back in to paint the full picture, but understand that there is a rebate that we can claim through the gas bills on the building. So the 399 that we're proposing as prior years in this capital project is really to you all new spending in 2020. So this is the next phase of the project.
This is the November resolution.
This is a resolution we're working on to get to you in November. I think it's ready, almost ready to come to you. So it'll be in by the deadline. And so you'll see that we've kind of spelled out what that includes. And it's really about energizing the building 201, that southern building that's 66,000 per square feet, two floors, really to protect it now that we've got sprinklers in there and we've started to kind of get the building systems already. We don't want that going into a deep freeze over the winter. And so this will allow us to energize it, get the boiler on to keep it at minimal operating temperature, and allow us to do the minor fixes and enhancements that are needed to bring it up to kind of basic minimum occupancy standards, which really ultimately at this stage is just to allow us for temporary occupancy to bring potential interested tenants into the building and show them the building. That's really the goal here. We have quotes in hand, thanks to the work of DPW and Buildings and Grounds for 99% of this work. Feel really confident in the budget estimates that we put together for that part of it. And then the red line there is meant to delineate that this is kind of the only thing that I think we're going to come to you without a further conversation about disposition of the property, because ultimately we understand that the rest of these dollar amounts are large in a financially constrained environment. And I think all along have thought that there are, as Devlin pointed out, other partners that can be brought into the mix when it comes to the capital stack necessary to get the building fully up and running and get the taller building, the four-story building, up and running as well. And so, you know, I think we see this as something, and I have detailed slides on this that I'll breeze through fairly quickly, but most of the rest of this we see as something that we would partner with other agencies to seek grant funding for these dollar amounts. So you've got a quick summary there. And I won't, given the lateness of the hour, I won't spend a lot of time on these slides, but I think I've sent this around to the clerks and they can share it with the members so you have a little bit more detailed breakout to review if you have questions. So again, this is the work completed in early 2020. I'll add back in that 60,000 that I netted out so that we see this as a correct number. But that's that work and describing some of the things that were included in that. And then this is the next phase that we're coming to you for a capital project in November. Breaking it out so you can see that a lot of the work is in the HVAC systems, the boilers, the chillers and controls for the heating and air conditioning and ventilation, some work on the life safety and security of the building, and then the initial stuff that's needed to make sure that the building is operational for when we are taking potential tenants through it and talking about occupancy of the building on a longer term. We've phased out in a later phase the telecom and IT work that would need to happen, knowing that at this point, without a real tenant, it's premature to do that, but it is something that once there are tenants in there, the building was designed obviously for one single tenant, and so all of the IT infrastructure is built for one single tenant, and so this is a cost that'll be in there to separate that out into a multi-tenant environment so that we can serve multiple tenants with different IT needs. And then the final phase, which is actually way out in the project timeline, is some window repairs. Ideally, if we can secure the funding, we'd love to replace the windows if there's an opportunity to do that. These are single pane windows in this building, and so it's an energy efficiency issue. But at minimal, there's window tinting and some repairs on the gussets on the window that need to be done. So that's all for building 201. And so we've separated that out so that you can see that southern building, which is really the closest to ready to occupy. We have a series of steps starting with a first phase this year with a capital project for about $400,000 that gets it ready to show to tenants and ready to start working on fit out for those tenants if we find somebody that's ready to take occupancy, and then getting all the way through to kind of the final stuff that we anticipate needing for that building to be fully satisfying. And then
Tim, are we going to get a copy of the last couple of slides, the beginning with the phasing of the capital project?
Yep, all of this, including this, which I think is okay. Maybe the most helpful.
Starting there, yeah. That's,
you'll get all this, yep.
Okay, thank you.
So then the last few are just taking the same approach, walking through the phases for buildings 202 and 203, which are the other parts of the complex. And in these in particular, we think that there's a need to go through a kind of design phase of the project with building 201. It was pretty clear what needed to be done, and DPW Buildings and Grounds had the knowledge and wherewithal to identify the needs. But I think as we get into the taller building, a little bit more complexity, and also we're hoping, as it'll be a little bit later in the timeline, that there may be more sophisticated tenants that might need more from the building. And so having an engineering and architectural phase, we'll make sure that we can accomplish all that. And then we already have estimates for a lot of these figures. One of the big ones is that we know that we need a fire pump system, the fire sprinklers on the third and fourth floor. There's not enough pressure with the gravity feed, so we need a pump. There's a pump over on the east side of the campus that's probably an old and in disrepair. And also it's not on right now county-owned property, so it seems wise to budget to replace that pump so we can provide fire suppression in the rest of the building. And then similarly with the IT and telecom, once we move towards occupation of the buildings 202 and 203, need to think about the multi-tenant setup there. There's actually even more that I won't go into, but you guys, I'll send the whole slide deck over. There's some more about kind of the assessment and the feasibility study that we did. And I in particular mentioned the Fuller building. So just kind of as a model, and I think one of the indicators that there's pent up demand is the rapid way that filled up with tenants that I think are very similar to the kinds of tenants that we can potentially attract at Tech City.
So just for the Fuller building was all pre-COVID, correct?
Yep. It was all pre-COVID.
So none of this, I think, you know, I know you've had general conversations with the folks out in the community, but I mean, given the fact that commercial real estate is almost non-existent to some degree, I'm not quite sure how you think you're going to fill up a building in the next year, given COVID. So if you could share a little bit what your thought process is or what you're hearing or what you know that we don't.
Well, I know that we've had lots of expressions of interest, and I think it is obviously, it's a tricky time. It's hard to predict the way things are going to play out in the next couple of years. But I think when we see the housing market doing what it's doing in our communities right now, we've seen this before. And we know what comes next after these kind of bubbles in our housing market. And that's often that people are choosing to be here and then they're choosing to work here. And that's often them either with their small businesses relocating out of the city, or if they're freelancers, or, you know, or what have you. And so I think that we expect, and I think that this is something we can continue to evaluate, but I think we see signs that despite the weakness in the commercial market right now, there is a niche that needs this space, mostly in that kind of maker and manufacturing, which, you know, we have seen as resilient even in the face of COVID-19. One of the things that I think helped us get through the first phase of the pandemic was the resilience of our local small-scale manufacturers. And so I think that there's still a need there, and we're hearing that need expressed. So.
And do you see, I can't see raised hands. Could we take the presentation off so I can make sure folks are able to, there we go. Okay. Comptroller Gallagher?
Tim, could you speak to the ceiling height on the first floor of 201? You guys are saying a lot, you're saying the word manufacturer, and most manufacturers need extensive ceiling height. And I'm not clear on this building. And then also, you know, has there been a market study of manufacturing need or maker need more than just anecdotal. It seems like maybe there was, so I'm just curious. Thanks. Right.
No, so the first question, ceiling heights are 14 feet. There are some parts of the building where that is obstructed even at 12 feet by building systems. And so there is a limit there. And I think that acknowledging that, there are still some tenants that we've had conversations with where that's not a problem. And so it is going to limit that. I think I'll admit that right now a lot of the interest is anecdotal. What we're talking about here, just to be clear, is a kind of a bootstrap approach is the best way that I can describe it, where we acknowledge that we don't have tens of millions of dollars to pour into the site to get it fully ready to do all of the assessments to determine what the right market is and then to build to suit to that market. And instead, I think what we see here is an opportunity to tap into, you know, kind of the anecdotal demand that we're hearing and to use that as kind of a first stage of revitalizing the site.
Legislative Walter, Green, then Bartels.
Thanks. So a few things. So one is sort of just to repeat on what Comptroller Gallagher spoke of. I mean, we have a building, a zero place that's opening, that's going to be done in December. And while the housing is all completely full, he's having a lot of trouble getting people to in the business part of it right now.
Yeah.
Relatedly, I saw nothing about sustainability, solar, geothermal, or anything like that. And relatedly, I'm not seeing the continuous. Maybe I'm just missing it because it is a lot of pages, but like the fuel cost, so you have the cost of like a boiler, but what I would imagine quite expensive to heat these buildings for this time. And is that incorporated in these costs, the fuel cost?
Right.
So operating expenses. Yes. Right.
I can speak to operating if you want, Tim. So
yeah, I was going to take that backwards. So Don, start with the operating.
So for 2021, the current operating budget is budgeted for a non-in-use building, the intent being that if we get somebody to come in to lease it, we would then come to the legislature to ask for an amendment to the budget to increase funds for both revenues and expenses. So the budget would go up, but there would be no county cost is the theory.
But you said that you needed it all heated and nice so that you can show people around. So
right.
There is a minimal operating budget in DPW's budget, which is enough to keep it at a low temperature to keep the pipes from freezing and everything. But as Don says, if we were going to have a tenant and actually have it at 68 degrees or something, there would be an extra utility cost above what's budgeted in DPW right now, and we would turn around and pass that cost on to any tenant.
And just so you know, the numbers we got in our operating, we contacted Central Hudson to figure out what they would build for their vacant use. So why they are estimates, we think they're accurate estimates. Can I say it's a guarantee of what the number will be? Not until we have our own historical data.
Okay. What is the number? Did I miss the number?
Oh, shoot. I'm sorry. I don't remember off the top of my head. I want to say between 100 and 150,000.
Okay. Thank you.
And Don, have we had any operating costs other than the spreadsheet you provided to the Ways and Means yesterday? I know that was brought up in Ways and Means. Are we yet paying electric or gas?
First utility bill actually 2 days ago, about $13,000.
Okay, so we have not paid that yet.
It's in the process of being paid, but yes, it's not paid yet.
How long was that for? I'm sorry to interrupt.
Typically, utility bills are about a month.
But then how do you arrive at, wouldn't you be somewhere at minimum in the 150 range, and that's not even with winter. So,
right. So let me get the full number for you, Tracy.
And that's electric. That's not oil.
Yeah, this is on natural gas. And Don, I have a higher number in my head from what we were estimating, but I'll let you look it up.
Yeah, I might be misquoting myself. So yeah.
All right, so that'd be helpful to have. But Tim, can you do the other two?
Yeah, can you remind me? I'm sorry.
So one of them was not really a question. It was just reiterating the problem of renting to businesses right now. But the efforts towards sustainability.
Ah, Well, yeah, I mean, I'll say that what we've tried to outline here is minimal cost to get it up to occupancy standards. That doesn't mean that we aren't equally excited about the idea of this being a potential demonstration project of good building efficiency and renewable energy generation. We've actually been exploring a couple of programs through NYSERDA that may be avenues to pursue in order to use this site as a demonstration for solar or other renewable or for building efficiency projects. But we recognize that those aren't the projects that we think are the minimal need in order to get the building up for occupancy. And so anything there would be something that we come back and talk with you all about, a grant application and get approval for that or something like along those lines.
So just we have $150,000 for gas and electricity and $75,000 in addition for basic building maintenance throughout the year. Legislator Archer, if you're talking, you're muted.
Thank you. Before we move on from expenses, the monthly report that you provide us is only for invoicing to date. We really need an understanding of what's the ongoing expenses of operating this building. So on a go-forward basis, we'd like it broken down by gas, electric. So just the operating cost of having the building open, whether there's someone in there or not. But in addition to some of the projects that have been done to date and what is being proposed for the future. So we have a full picture. And if in fact there's DPW staff that is doing work in that, we should understand that as well.
So just to give you full clarity, the information that I've given you so far is, I would say, atypical of operating expense in that it's work being done to get the building up to snuff, like Tim's saying, bootstrap work. And then what you're quoting in addition is the utility work, which wouldn't fall into that same column.
Yeah, no, I want to know what the ongoing cost of taking that out of mothballs and putting it online and what it's costing us every month. And so we can look at and anticipate what additional expenses. When we started down this path, let's be clear, it was going to be under $200,000. And at this juncture, you know, by the end of this year, we'll be close to $600,000, $700,000. And another 500 being projected for next year. So, I mean, it's gone from we're just getting the building up and running and getting some independence with regard to electric and gas. And now we've got a building that is being put online. And so in addition to getting it to that stage, we also have, you know, monthly operating expenses. So we should be looking at all of that in the context of what you provide us on a monthly basis.
Understood. And just to give you guys a little clarity, there was a new building division established in the buildings department.
Okay.
It's 1228, which is West Enterprise Drive. That'll have the numbers for your typical. If you run the budget report, it'll show the 225.
It'll show. Okay,
and
that's excellent.
And what's broken down into that. So it's only seven things right now, just so you know. It's building maintenance supplies, gas and electricity, air conditioning maintenance, pest control, security alarm maintenance, water usage, and other building maintenance and repair, which is for all of our buildings. That's the catch-all of if something happens and we need an emergency repair, that's what we pay out.
So that would be our ongoing monthly expense in 1228.
If the building is vacant, the 225 broken down into those seven categories, exactly.
Okay, great. Thank you. Now, Legislator Green, you had a question?
I had a few comments. Okay. I raised my hand early in the presentation, and I'll start with that, and I'll work to very specific comments on sustainability. And it has to do with the dismissing of toxicity on the site as mainly poor handling of asbestos on the primarily east side of Enterprise Drive, I guess. And my understanding is that there were VOCs in the groundwater and that the toxicity, they also
you know, they used a lot of solvents and so forth, and that it was more than just asbestos. And I have seen some maps of that. Relative to that, my thought for the site, and I've raised this a few times, is to think of it as a recycling, reuse, industrial park, primarily because I'm not yet convinced that it's suitable for housing. I will take your word for the time being that, you know, that all of that's been checked out, and I certainly support, you know, multi-use. I am concerned that we have a lot of vacant space at malls and other places that I'm not sure, you know, why this would be more marketable than they would be. But I don't know whether that idea of a recycling industrial park, which would also solve potentially some of our solid waste problems if we were able to attract markets into Ulster County, that would be making products out of waste that we already have and have a hard time marketing. And I could go into details about that, but I won't. I just wonder, you know, did you just go right to housing and office space for the building? So that's my first issue. And then the other main issue is, it doesn't sound to me like the sustainability criteria will get implemented after a tenant. If you're going to super insulate a building, you would do that before renting it out. And then my last very specific question is, was the roof assessed, as we have asked for every county building, but while you were in there doing a building assessment, was that large flat roof assessed for solar?
So maybe I'll just start by clarifying that we haven't discussed or entertained at this point any housing use on the site. Everything so far that we've been thinking about and looking at and assessing interest has been on the light industrial and small scale manufacturing and commercial uses. So, you know, just to clarify that, you know, I would look to Don, or if I think Tom's not here, if this has been assessed yet. I don't believe it's been assessed yet, although that's certainly something that we can entertain as we move forward with the building.
We have not assessed the site for solar, and I think we would need to determine that we were going to have a long-term property interest in the site in order to do that.
Legislative Walter?
Yeah, I'll just say, you know, since it's been a long night, broadband sooner, this later. We're in COVID still. Nobody's going to be coming here to rent right now. Like, let's get through this. Let's not even try to show it to anyone this winter, because it's not going to happen for so many reasons. And let's put our energy into the broadband and pause on this and regroup on it in like 6 months is what I'm thinking. Just saying.
That's a short and to the point. Thank you. Legislative Bartels.
Yeah. You know, I've expressed a lot of my concerns about this project. It's a great presentation, and a really optimistic and admirable vision. And I don't say that lightly. I mean, I sincerely, I'm impressed by it. I would be much more open if it were a private industry that were bringing it forward. You know, the Fuller project, you know, it is, and was a success story pre-COVID. And I do have a sense of optimism about our ability to rebound from COVID, but I'm very concerned about spending of this being a bottomless pit of expense. And, you know, here we are, we're talking about numbers that are rising exponentially as we learn more about the proposed project. And that doesn't even take into account in the early part of your presentation, you highlighted, and I would like to go into that detail, though not tonight, you highlighted the other buildings that are at various phases of getting to foreclosure, which I assume if we continue with an aggressive pact on that front, then we'll take ownership of those buildings and they'll be added to the to all these types of winterization and the moving forward. I'm very curious if an analysis has been done of the expected revenue from rents against the expected cost of the build out. I mean, we're hearing, I think, you know, if you read, and I'm sure Tim, you've studied this extensively. If you read about the expectation post COVID, and I know we're not there yet. There's expected to be a lag in the retail sector of commercial business, but the kind of in small scale industrial that you're talking about is expected to boom. I mean, in fact, I've read articles where they're talking about the very type of mall closures that we're seeing within our county of being repurposed for small scale industrial. And I think that's something exciting, not just for this region, but for this country, you know, bringing manufacturing back. But these rents are being aggressively negotiated from Manhattan all the way up to here. So I don't think this is, I don't think it's going to be, a net even, you know, I think we're going to have to spend a lot of money. And I'm interested in that analysis, but I'm also interested when you hear about, positive feedback from those in the, I'll just call it the private sector. I'm very interested if anyone in the private sector is interested in taking on this redevelopment themselves, because that to me would be the best case scenario in this immediate environment where I think we're going to have a lot of challenges on our, not just on our finances, but on our workforce, on the ability for us to answer all of the very many concerns of our constituencies and of those in our county who are already in very, very hard times and are going to be in even more. So I am very, I'm going to say, very cautious and concerned about jumping into this project the way that it's proposed. And it's not because I don't think that it looks great. It's that I don't know that we have the wherewithal or that this, as legislator Walter said, is the right time. So I would hope that you're having the conversations with the private sector about their interest in taking this on themselves.
You know, I'll let Tim answer the question about the rent analysis, because I know he's been working on that, and I'll apologize that I'm afraid at this hour and not having eaten since lunch, I'm feeling a bit dazed. So I'll try to be as coherent as I can. But I totally hear you, all of the comments about the risk and the timing. And I think what we're doing is really needing to balance that against the risk of continuing to do nothing with this property and the risk of getting this into the hands of another so-called developer who will do nothing with it. And what we're hearing about the commercial real estate market is, yes, there's the market for office space and for retail space is very challenged. The market for so-called maker space and manufacturing space is much more vibrant than that. But what there's definitely not a good market for right now is selling a 400,000 square foot office building. One of the folks we talked to used the phrase bottom feeders to describe the only actors in the market right now. I think we've been dealing with a bottom feeder for 25 years, and the last thing we want is another bottom feeder right now. So we realize that this is a risky proposal, But we think it's actually less risky than doing nothing and less risky than taking our chances on another developer with a scheme. And that this is an appropriate, relatively low cost for the potential reward, as Tim said, bootstrappy way of trying to turn the site around and generate something here. In terms of the East Campus, I don't anticipate going through this same process on the East Campus. What we want to do with this building is generate some excitement and some momentum that will make the East Campus parcels more attractive to true developers and to businesses that need that much space who will want to come in and be attracted to the site there. We want to make this an exciting place to be, someplace that there's so much energy and enthusiasm and creative stuff being done that people want to be there. And we really think that's possible right now, and that it's really more risky to do nothing than to take a chance on that vision. Tim, you may want to say more about... Yeah,
just to say that we are definitely looking at a kind of revenue model for the building and feel that there are reasonable paths forward, that we haven't gotten to testing the market on the rates that we think we can get, but we, in conversations with folks who know the going rates, feel pretty confident that there's a kind of program of space in the building that can not only sustain the operating costs, but can sustain a stream of income that can help us with financing for some portion of what might need to happen in the future.
Comptroller Gallagher? Legislator Cahill, I just saw your hand go up.
It's only been up for about 10 minutes, but that's okay.
It's not intentional. It's very hard with this. So
yeah, I understand. I just wanted to make a couple of quick points. One is that I think, you know, we're hearing that there's a lot of interest from Deputy Wright and from Tim, Economic Development Director Tim Wiederman there. And I'm just wondering if there's any way you could share some of that interest with us. You know, that would be great. That would really ease our minds a little bit if we could see, you know, where this activity is actually coming from. Not necessarily, obviously, confidentiality that has to take place, but certainly the number of inquiries, the size of the company, the number of employees are coming, that they're potentially coming in, the type of work they want to do. I mean, we're talking about, you know, very vague, you know, grandiose type things, and asking the legislature to commit a lot of money to that without anything behind it, it's a tough sell. Yeah. Right. And, I'll do anything to avoid Legislator Green's suggestion of turning that into an industrial recycling center that will inherit other construction and demolition debris a quarter of a mile from my house. I'll be looking for a lot of information for some of these other businesses that could potentially come in there. And hopefully that will help us with our decision. If you guys could help us with that, you know, we may be able to help you with going forward on this thing.
Legislator Green?
Yeah, I didn't get my question answered about other toxicity. And I've been to a few of these meetings and seen maps that indicate to me that there may be a VOC plume or, other sources of contamination. And all right, well, that was mainly, that part of the question didn't get answered. But I have also, it seems to me that I've seen press releases that indicated both housing and light industrial use. So, I'm confused by what seem like mixed messages.
Evelyn, do you want to take any of that? I can take some.
Sure. So the groundwater pollution that you're referencing is largely confined to the East Campus. So that's what I was referring to in terms of the long-term management process that IBM has with DEC. So there's ongoing pumping and containment of the groundwater, there's ongoing air stripping, and there's lots of ongoing monitoring. So that affects largely the central portion of the East Campus. And so that's where the development uses are the most restricted. The possibility of housing, that's talking about the entire site. So portions, the south portion of the East Campus was designated by DEC as potential for what they call restricted residential, which is multifamily condo type development, not single family. That would not be allowed because of the contamination. It's also a possibility of constructing housing on the West Campus. So those are definitely possibilities that have been talked about. But you know, one of the things we want to embark on is a broader planning process for the campus as a whole. And I'm happy to talk through more about the details of the environmental stuff, but that does not affect the buildings that we're talking about in terms of the West Campus.
I just wanted to be acknowledged because there was reference to the East Campus and said mainly asbestos issues, and it was my understanding that it was more than that. So thank you.
I'm sorry that I was confusing. What the point I was trying to make with that is that contamination is absolutely there and is in a multi-decade management process. That's correct. What's not correct is the widespread view in the general public that those are a barrier to development and reuse. They're not. So there are restrictions on the uses that can be done there. We're never going to drink the groundwater there. Or Dennis tells me not to say never. In our lifetimes, we're not going to drink the groundwater there. So there are definitely restrictions, and there are procedures that have to be followed in using the site, but it's not an obstacle to development. And that's the message that we want to make sure the community understands.
But if I may, as a direct response, if you're pumping and treating and releasing VOCs into the air, you know, that affects the air quality. So I think it's a little more complicated, but I don't want to take any more time. I just want to acknowledge that, that the public is aware that there are more problems than just asbestos.
Comptroller Gallagher?
Yeah, is there a conversation happening about moving county offices or county functions to this building? And the reason I ask is I feel like vaguely looking back into my conversations with the county executive in 2019 before I took office, he said something about that. Can you guys speak to that? Have you looked at that as a potential use? Is that in conversation? You know, I know we are space constrained in certain areas, so thanks.
Yeah, I'd say conversation is a great way to describe what there is. So we've definitely talked about it. And I think that has to do with the conversation about the long-term institutional arrangements and how long we think that, for example, a local development corporation might own that site and lease space to the county. It's definitely one of the possibilities we've talked about. But we haven't, you know, taken that from the conversation stage into any kind of planning or analysis process.
Are we going to be in 2021 moving county offices to this building?
I don't know that it's impossible that we'll come back and have that discussion in 2021. We may.
So I think this came up at the original presentation when you presented this to the leadership group.
Yep.
Prior to any move or finalized decision, we would hope that we would have a conversation and a detailed relocation plan that talks about some of the movement. We know that we've got some rents that are above what we believe we should be paying market-wise. And, you know, some of it is because of location and proximity to courts, et cetera. But I think it's really important if there is a longer-term plan of moving and utilizing, even to leverage that from the perspective as a tenant to attract a local development, which I get, we still need to have a more detailed conversation around something before things like that move. And I think to the point that Legislator Cahill made, I want to reinforce as well that if you all have a plan and you've run some numbers that say this is what we think we can do from a rental perspective, I understand you don't want to be publishing right. your square footage. It's a negotiation. Right. But if you have something that can give us a general idea of how to offset costs and maybe yep. even take into account some expenditures we've already put, that can go a long way of getting folks comfortable. But I don't think any of us feel that we're experts as landlords, and I think that's not something as a long-term option. Yet I recognize the challenge. So anybody else that has anything they want to get asked or Legislator Bartels?
Well, I'm okay with this subject, but I'm wondering, are we going to go through the rest of the book tonight, or are we going to go for another meeting? Because I'm feeling a little like
I see the time, I appreciate all the effort everybody's put into this. If there are questions and people believe we have questions for the broader plan, we can schedule another joint meeting.
Can I say that just speaking for myself, not that I want another meeting, I think it would be helpful. I thought that last year it was also a long meeting, but it was helpful to go through point by point. I think this was a good way to do it, to highlight the new projects. But I've noted lots of questions that are probably going to be quick questions, but I have a lot of questions that I would like answered on the rest of the capital, but I don't know that we want to do it tonight at 9 o'clock.
No, I think we're past the hour of functioning. No, but I appreciate all the time and effort and everybody sticking with this. I will, Legislator Walter.
I just, you know, like I have questions, but only on two of them. Is it possible? I mean, does it make sense to sort of and Tracy, I don't know if it's like the gamut or whether there's a certain particular ones, but it might help to have a sense of how many we want to review. I don't mean right now, but like in terms of planning for that meeting.
So let me huddle with Amber and Natalie and Dean and find out how we want to do this. Maybe it's going to request... maybe it's something we can add to one of our meetings. No. Okay.
I mean, I would say no. I think that we're going to get through, I think we're going to get through some of them really fast, because when you look, there's some that have none in 2021, some that are pretty self-explanatory. But I mean, I know for myself, there's a bunch where, you know, I'd like the breakout of what they're proposing on 2021.
I'm just going to say we're going to schedule another meeting, and whether it takes us an hour or 2 hours or three, let's schedule another meeting, because this, everybody has benefited from this. And I think it's helped give us insight as we get ready to go into, amendments, et cetera. So I think it's important to, you know, spend more time. Hopefully we can, you know, that'll work for Mark, your team as well.
Yeah, that should be fine. I mean, okay. I would assume that most of these would focus on public works. So whether we need all of the people who are here tonight, I don't know. If that's different, then let me know, and maybe we can schedule certain times for.
So what I will ask members, if to go through the things we did not talk about tonight, if it's more than public works, you need to let us know, and we'll make sure those folks are there. Otherwise, we'll continue to focus on it, and we'll do a quick review. And I think everyone, including new legislators who didn't go through this process last year, will see that there is benefit to this conversation. So, okay.
We went through this process.
Pardon me? Oh, you did.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I can remember. It's It's late.
It was after the budget passed last year.
Oh, that's right. That's
this
right.
Is the this first year time we're doing actually it doing it prior to you passing it.
I'm hungry. Hangry. okay. Thank you so much, everyone. Thank you, Mark, the exec side. We really appreciate all you legislators who stuck with this. Thank you all for being here, and we will, I'll take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Thanks, Natalie.
I know I don't get a vote, but I.
Be safe and stay healthy.
Yes. Thank you, everyone.
Take care.